Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, you can tell it's Monday. Just because I'm out of the routine, you know, when I do the show every day, you kind of get into everything and everything kind of flows smoothly. But Mondays, I'm overprepared. I've had 2 days, you know, to do other things. And the microphone was still across the desk at, you know, about 30 seconds before the show started. I'm like, oh, I guess I better move that over. Anyway, we've got our wonderful person, Jessica Rivera, on the line right now, who's doing some incredible investigative reporting with us. So I don't have a theme just yet, so I'm going to see if I can make up one. I played this last week. And it seemed to work out. I just have to write the script for it. So let's see if I can sound like an official news report here. Hang on. It might be a little loud. I might have to turn it down. We'll see. I'll just play with it. Oh, it moved. I hate it when it moves. Okay, there we go. No, that's not right. There it is. And don't move, computer. And now, the Rivera Report. Just for a planet, the Action Radio Citizen Legislature. Oh, there we go. How's that? Good morning, Jessica. How's that sound?
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I had a great time. I've already got the adrenaline going, so and I think I'm funny, and that's probably the most dangerous part of the show right there. But yeah,
I can hear it in your voice for sure.
Well, it's like a kick in the pants, you know, when you do this. All of a sudden, you know, it's kind of funny. I guess people don't realize, unless you've done radio, that there's something about when you hear the music going on. And I was pretty calm walking around here this morning, you know, drinking my tea and having all kinds of great, you know, fruits, vegetables and stuff to get my day going, and lots of protein and all that. But just something happens when the show starts. I'm just a radio person. You know, I'm connected. You know, I'm connected to the universe. This is wild. Anyway, enough about me. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. Thank you. I had a really great weekend. But yeah, when you have 2 days to kind of, I guess for you, not necessarily rest, but allow your mind to. Exactly. This was the same.
When are we ever resting?
2 days. Exactly.
Yeah. For those of the hyperactive ADHD variety, we're never really resting. We're just not thinking as hard. It's kind of a relative term.
True.
Well, let me give you my idea right away, and then we can get started, because you've got a couple of really great topics to talk about, and I want to get to those.
Okay.
But it suddenly occurred to me that since you're such a you're like the only broadcast professional here, most of the rest of us, I mean, I have a little bit. I've got a year of radio, a year and 4 months, you know, at a regular radio station. Well, not that regular. They had me. That was a good sign to begin with. But I was just thinking, what would happen if you took some of our bills and actually reported on them as a reporter? You know, not connected to Action Radio anyway, but if you were just a regular, you know, broadcast investigator and the story came across your desk, this radio show is writing citizen legislation, I'd be really curious if you could put on your objective hat and just take a look at some of the bills. And I was thinking about that. That would be incredibly helpful to me so I can anticipate questions. And so if you're thinking, if that intrigues you at all, the only one I would make for a suggestion to start with, because I think it's our most critical, is our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. And it is especially appropriate right now, given what's happened with this return of the continuing resolution, you know, the bad penny that never goes away. They say they don't do it again, but then they do it again. You know, it's like Lucy. You know, we're not kicking the can down the road. We're just pulling the football away. And Charlie Brown falls for it every time. And you can think about it if you want, but I just think it'd be an interesting exercise to see what you come up with. What do you think?
Yeah. Yes. I think that would be a great idea. Let's try it. Mm-hmm. We can start it next Monday.
Yeah, that'd be fine. In fact, you could do one every week or whatever you want to do.
Sure.
I would just suggest that first one. After that, pick your own bills. Pick whatever interests you. And the place you want to go, and this goes for everybody too who's listening, writeyourlaws.com, writeyourlaws. And the first page is all about how to write bills. It's about us. So that's very that'll give you a great introduction. All bills have a very simple format. They've got an introduction, you know, why you're writing the bill, The middle section is the old legislation, the laws that are currently on the books. And the third section is what we're changing or amending or creating if it's new law. And that's it. And then you go to legislation, which is the next item on the menu bar. The first place is propose a new law. That's where you actually write your own bills. Second place is citizen bill ideas. That's like our committee hearing. Those are the bills that are in progress. We're working on them, amending them, putting them out for public comment. But the third place, and Jessica, this is where you want to go, is all proposed laws. These are the ones that are ready to go. These are the ones that have been, you know, shipped out to media and government since they've been written. And that's where you'll find a constitutional amendment against borrowing money. You may even suggest or take a look at, in fact, if you want to do something interesting, this is just another thought too. Compare it to the current balanced budget amendment, because they are very different. Very different. And that's all I'll say about that. But anyway, all proposed laws. So you go to writeyourlaws.com and then legislation and then all proposed laws. And any of those are fair game. Feel free. You'll probably get about 50.
Okay. Only 50. Yes, no, I will go ahead and go to that. And we can, we will definitely try it out next week. I think it's great.
Okay.
Yes, because it's exactly what this, you know, your platform is. So that only makes sense, I think.
Yeah. And be brutal. Be you can even pretend to be a liberal reporter and really have fun with this. I mean, just go out.
Okay.
I can't believe this.
Okay.
You know, I mean, just it's up to you. It's really up to you. And we just got Marco checking in from the Netherlands. Good morning, Marco. Or good afternoon, Marco. So we got him out there. So we are international already, which is good. So you have two topics. Go for it. What you got?
I do. So the first one is the Obama's chef's death, which took place in mid-July, July 23rd exactly. 45-year-old Tafari Campbell, who mm-hmm. was the president's personal chef in the White House, and when they left the White House, they took him with them, and he was working at their Martha's Vineyard home, which I think a lot of people had heard about, but you possibly have forgotten about it, because when I was looking for stuff, I thought I'd find a plethora, just tons of articles or, you know, reports on it, and there's really little to be found. I think it was maybe a quick story on maybe a couple days later. And I think maybe some publications wrote some information articles, not very in-depth by any means, mm-hmm. up until about the middle of August. But the story is that he was a very avid swimmer. So mm-hmm. as far as him drowning, that was questionable. I think a lot of people wondered how that could be. But apparently
are there videotapes of him swimming? I mean, I think that's
on his social,
all right. So this is confirmed.
On his social media, yes.
He can swim. Okay.
Yes. and he looked he looked like a healthy young man.
44?
So
he was 44 years old, right?
He was 45. Yeah, 45 years old.
45, okay.
And,
it's,
yes, it seems as if on Sunday evening of the 23rd, him and an unknown female, who they believe also worked for the Obamas, went out for a paddleboard, because I guess that
Michelle?
Is something you.
I have to ask. Michelle?
No, you know, this person has not been this person's identification to this day has still not been disclosed. But apparently, while he was paddleboarding in the evening, which I guess is something to do over there, because the area by the home is much more like a pond. So it's very, very, it's not going straight into the ocean by any means. So it's a very calm water. And I guess it's a thing to do over there, and you can do it during the day, in the evening, whichever. So they had gone out on Sunday evening, somehow, some way, which
it's warm.
We are not.
It's warm.
Yes,
The days are long, because if it's July 23rd, that's only a month after the summer solstice of June 21st. So it's only a month later. So they would have only lost, a short amount of daylight. You know, I don't know how much is per, 15 minutes a month or something like that. So, yeah, it's still bright. It's hot. Interesting.
Yeah, so there was really nothing odd about that situation.
Right.
Unfortunately, he apparently had some sort of an accident while paddle boarding, and he did not come back, or with this unidentified female was unable to locate him. So a call was put out. They eventually found him that Monday morning, the 24th, and he was about 100 feet offshore in about 8 feet of water. Okay, so then this is when the investigation starts, correct? But by mid-August, Massachusetts police had officially by that time ruled it an accident. So, you know, everybody figured, okay. It was closed. Yeah, they didn't hear very much. Nobody really heard much from his family, which he had a wife and a couple kids. Nobody heard really anything about it. They figured, okay, Massachusetts police have now ruled it an accident. Here's the issue, though, one of the issues. So as soon as it is sealed as an accident and it's closed, right, it is supposed to be public record, public information. But the Massachusetts police, to this airing, up into this airing, is saying that there's still an open investigation. Therefore, there are no public records, which a lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot of people, I should say one specific group in that area, which is known as the First Amendment Coalition, has been pushing for answers.
Oh, get them on the show. Open. Oh, bring them on. Bring them on. Yeah. Bring them on the show, please.
Absolutely.
Make them your guest.
It's either closed or open.
No.
Closed or open. And as of right now, there's no public record because there's still an ongoing investigation. And that's kind of where the story ends mid-August. They have gotten, this group, this coalition has gotten nowhere with the Massachusetts police. But here is the kicker. None of that brought up any questions.
Well, it did. I got half a page of questions already. We're just getting started.
Okay, here's the kicker, and then we'll get into all that. So June 13th of 2015, so let's rewind a little bit. Walter Scheib, I don't know if anybody remembered this because this is probably a blurb too in the media. Walter Scheib was out hiking in Taos, New Mexico. He went missing. And then he was found dead of an apparent drowning on June 21st, 2015. The kicker is, who was this person? Do you have any answers? Any guesses?
I remember something about a hiker in New Mexico. I don't know how you drown in New Mexico. They don't have any water. They don't have any major rivers.
There are some waterways.
Okay. But I can't think of any. Did he drown in one of those major – I don't think the Colorado runs through there. Or does it?
No. But what's interesting is, okay, so they found his body. He had drowned. Who was he? He was the ex-White House chef for the Clintons.
What is it with chefs?
Back in the
we always say the butler did it. Now we're getting chefs. This
yes. So I want to say this first and foremost. I am not saying that these two incidents are connected in any way, shape, or form that I have found. But is the question a lot. Exactly. This is a little odd considering. So a lot of the questions coming up from people, which are obviously not getting answered, the question is really, is this a coincidence or do these chefs, I mean, because you figure a chef, right, is going to be, especially for high-profile people, they're going to live in the home. They're going to see how this family lives. They're privy to conversations in what they're doing. So the question is,
they know everything.
Exactly. Did they know too much? Was there something that they saw or heard that they shouldn't have? Or are these two really separate incidents that just seem coincidental and there are really two accidental drownings? And there that is. So
how about the race of the two? Are they same race, different races?
You know what? No, I think Scheib was a white gentleman. And yes, Tafari Campbell was a black gentleman.
Now we got a black chef to the Obamas. We got a white chef to Clinton. Okay, and there's probably nothing there. Yeah. I'm just for background. This is fascinating. How old? Do you know how old Walter Scheib was? I think you might have mentioned that already.
No, Walter Scheib, I do. You know what? I can find that out for you. I did not look. I did not. I'm figuring he's around the age of Tafari. I don't think he could be much younger, much older at that point.
Has he been
when
seen
you're
with
that...
Hillary? Has he been seen with Hillary at all?
Well, he hasn't been seen since 2015. Yes.
Okay. All right. So, huh? That's right before she lost. Okay. This is just getting interesting. I don't know. This is fascinating.
Yes.
I
thought I was going to find some like real like answers, and really what it has ended up being, which I'm going to try and keep up on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we're not done. We're not done with this one.
No, there's no. It actually ended up raising a lot more questions.
Well, that is an answer. And, you know, probably the most important thing you found is it's hard to find stuff. You know, there's a ton of stuff. I actually found a Tea Party article, which I posted a little bit ago. It's got something to drag that with some more details. But this is really interesting. Chappaquiddick comes to mind. Have Bianchi, I'll be blunt. I'll tell you, Bianchi says Chef was banging Michelle. So that's why I brought Michelle up earlier. So Bianchi's the one that came up. He said immediately, as soon as he heard that Barack Obama's chef had died, he said, yeah, he was probably bopping Michelle. And so I just put it out there. But have they been seen together in pictures? Are there any?
I mean, as a family. But I don't think that there, I have not found any just casual pictures. No, Tafari was married, like I said. I believe his wife is also a chef. Nobody really heard much from her after his death, other than we know he was married, and I believe he had twin sons, and that's about it. It really goes for about a month. There's a few things from his death to about mid-August. There's a few articles, nothing really major, obviously. And then it kind of dies out. There's nothing kind of after that.
Okay. Bianchi then says he served her breakfast in bed. Seems to me I remember a picture of Tafari Campbell in the middle with Michelle to his right and Barack to his left. Okay, so that's just an image that popped in my head. So that's a real picture. Okay, so they were chummy. They all, you know, this is like the White House, you know, barber or the dog walker or the whatever. What's the equivalent? I can't
babysitter. Say chairman.
Babysitter. Oh, yeah, it's even better. Yeah, so this is interesting. These people know too much. And we know that Hillary has a long history to have rumored to have removed, shall we say, anybody who was about to testify against her. There was the you've seen the Clinton death list, right? Guy that suddenly had a barbell dropped on his neck.
I have.
And I then, know. Of course, Seth. Well, how about Seth Rich? That'd be a good person to follow up with, too. What's the latest on the Seth Rich investigation? The guy was shot in the back three times in a robbery? Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff going on. But here's something interesting. Now, this is on Martha's Vineyard, and I've been I don't know if I've been to Matthew's. I think I have been once briefly, but I know I went to Nantucket a few times because I went to high school and junior high in Lexington, Massachusetts. And so we took trips, you know, to Cape Cod and out to Nantucket. It's beautiful there, but it's rich. And I don't think I went to Martha's Vineyard now that I think about it. Anyway, we call it Mighty Whitey Island around here. I mean, it is the whitest island. It is unbelievable. It's the richest liberal white people on the planet are in Martha's Vineyard. So the Obamas fit in perfectly. And they had this massive compound right on the waterfront, which sort of defies climate change. But it's but what's interesting about that is, isn't Chappaquiddick on Martha's Vineyard?
I believe so. Not if it's not on it, it's not too far. But I believe it is.
And the Kennedy
compound?
My memory compound?
Serves me correct.
Yeah. So here's what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm thinking. It'd be really interesting if the chief of police was one of the original investigators at Chappaquiddick. Just curious. You know.
Well, it would be nice to find that out, but they're not allowing anything to be released. And I think when I was reading one article of the reasoning that they were giving to this coalition, the Massachusetts police, is because they were still awaiting toxicology reports. Here's the thing. Toxicology reports don't take that long. And if they do take long, why would you deem it an accident if you're still waiting for more information to come through?
It just
doesn't make sense. It's not a good excuse.
And if you're drunk, how do you stand up on a paddleboard? Just, you know, call me crazy. you know. But well, here's the thing with the so far unidentified younger woman. Do we know? Is there any information on her? Was she staff? Was she working there? Was she a friend?
Yeah.
And what was he doing? Okay, so what's her? What do you know about her?
So, other than her complete identification, we know it's a female around 26 years old and was also staff for the Obamas. How she was a staff member, it's still a mystery.
Huh. Was Tafari's family with him on Martha's Vineyard?
No information. But the Obamas, I know in the beginning they said that the Obamas were at the home. It is safe to say that from what I can gather, they were not at the home. None of the Obamas were home.
Of course not.
The 911
call. I'd be surprised
call,
if they were.
The 911, yeah.
I'd be really surprised the if
they were. The 911 call was actually made by a Secret Service. And yeah, that's about the extent of the information. It's very.
Well, how did Secret Service know? Were they watching this guy? Do they watch the staff?
This is what I am surmising. I am surmising that Campbell went out with this unidentified woman for whatever reason to go paddleboarding in the evening.
Sure.
And to go paddleboarding. And she obviously could not, had maybe possibly lost track of him, maybe saw something happen, and then came back, went to the home, told Secret Service that they needed to call 911, and then that's possibly when the search started. Of course, it's difficult to search for somebody at night, so they
didn't
find
have a cell phone
in the morning.
Wait a minute, he went back to the house to call? Didn't he have a cell phone? I mean, aren't these people in constant – the Secret Service guy, aren't they in constant communication with everybody because that's what they do?
You know, I don't know if this female went – I'm just surmising this because there's no real clear information. But if this female went back to the home and contacted, you know, off of the – you know, just because it's just right there. So literally she could, you know, run up to the home and – tell the Secret Service, whoever was there, that she couldn't locate him. And possibly that's when the 911 call was made. I'm not definite about that, but that's what's making sense. And then the search started through the night up until Monday morning when he was found.
Okay, so let's play Columbo here for a bit. So he's on a paddleboard.
Okay.
Is she on a paddleboard too? Is she on his paddleboard or a separate paddleboard?
We do not know, but we know that they went out together.
How many paddleboards were found? Maybe she did.
I'm figuring, I don't paddleboard, but I'm figuring when people go paddleboarding, because I have friends that do it, you usually paddleboard on one board.
Right.
People aren't like double on one. I don't normally, I've never seen that.
No, you're too easy to fall
like
off.
A child or... Exactly.
Yeah, your balance. One person leans one way, the other leans the other way. You both fall off, right?
So you figure both of them had their own paddle boards.
So where's her paddle board?
Exactly. I don't – who knows? This could be somebody – this could be who they're – this person who's quote-unquote unidentified and they're saying exists. Mm-hmm. Do they exist?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So you're saying that this young woman with Tafari might not – there might not have been a young woman with him.
Exactly.
We don't know.
I mean, we don't know because it's
There's no pictures.
She's
never been identified in pictures. Okay, so we don't know. Do you know what her staff position in the Obama compound is? Okay, so we don't know what she does. We don't know who she is. We don't know what she does. We think she's a staff member.
A ghost of some sort.
Okay. Maybe she works for the mafia. I mean, who knows, right? The Secret Service. You would think they would know. I mean, they're supposed to protect these people. Do staff get Secret Service protection?
I don't believe staff get Secret Service protection. I think the Secret Service was probably just at the home because that's where they are probably assigned, whether the Obamas are there or not. Probably still some that are left back to protect the home, correct? In case
because they're vulnerable to attack. Or also bribery, extortion, blackmail, all kinds of things they would be subject to.
Sure.
So they'd have some kind of protection also. Okay. Well, let's go back to the paddleboard. Let's go back to the scene of the crime. I'm trying to think how a healthy 45-year-old man who is known to swim because we've seen it on videotape could drown in 8 feet of water. Now, the question is,
yes,
why didn't he just grab his paddleboard and hang on?
Here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
I will play the devil's advocate and say that I am very open to the idea accidents happen all the time. Possibly mm-hmm. there was drinking involved, possibly other, I don't know, because nobody knows except the police.
Right.
Because
they're not telling.
They will not allow, no, they're yeah. not allowing any of the public records to be public, which they should
right.
be if it's already deemed an accident and official.
How about the 911
and
call?
There's nothing.
Usually
so
the 911
call
gets released. Yeah.
And so the 911 call, they say it's the call, but really where it starts, police officer or whoever, I believe it's the 911 dispatcher possibly, getting the call. You don't really hear anybody saying anything other than possibly the police dispatcher relaying the information to police about, oh, we think it's about a 40-year-old male. I forget the words that they use, but basically it's
right.
a very general. It's not like you don't hear much from whoever did make the call mm-hmm. or anything of that nature.
So they say African-American male?
I don't believe. I think they just say male around 40 years old.
So where are all the liberal groups? They're surprisingly quiet about this. I mean, Black Lives Matter hasn't made a comment. No liberal black member of Congress has said anything. Not even conservative ones. I mean, nobody's commenting on this. I mean, everybody, there's like this blackout. Nobody's saying a word.
It is.
Aren't they curious?
It is.
Yeah.
But as far
I'm
as
curious.
The accident, what I was saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go
I
back
was like,
to that.
Oh, I must have. No. I get very sidetracked also.
Oh,
I can be very open to the fact or to the possibility that mm-hmm. if somebody is drinking or has a little too much of whatever, possibly falls off, hits their head, mm-hmm. is, you know, unconscious, things of that nature, I'm very open to that. But there's nothing there that they're even insinuating or that they've allowed for people to see. So really, the police or whoever is in charge of these records at this point, it should be the Massachusetts police. It's possibly not. They really don't care if there's questions or not. They're just not going to allow the information to be made public, and that probably won't be for who knows how long.
No, they're using the Chappick model. You know,
yeah.
they perfected hiding information when Ted Kennedy went off the bridge with Mary Joan Kopechne. This is what I'm saying. If you can find pictures, you know, of Chappaquiddick and just like pictures of the investigating officers in newspaper clipping things or photographs of newspaper articles at the time, and see if you'd see a name, you know, in that article, and
okay.
then see if, you know, and then I would look at the current, you know, they usually have, and here's this year's, you know, Martha's Vineyard Police Force, and they'll do something, or somebody gets an award, mm-hmm. you know, present at the award ceremony of so-and-so is the following officers, and just see if any of them are in common. Just, you know, because Chappaquiddick
okay.
was 70s?
Yes.
Okay, so we're talking 70s, and this is 50 years later. So
yes.
it's
so
probably...
I'm highly doubting...
Yeah, no, the senior people wouldn't still be there.
But I,
no. But a
yes,
younger...
I'm highly doubting, but I also will,
yeah.
Say that if it was maybe a little less time in between, it's a possibility
uh-huh.
because I believe it's highly, highly impossible that the police force out there has a high turnover with the public figures that they have to... deal with.
Yeah.
So I highly doubt that there's just a huge turnover. I'm pretty sure it's pretty a stable group that is at that,
well,
you know, the police
also
station.
Might be kids or grandkids of those officers, you know, who are there
mm-hmm.
at Chappaquiddick. This might be a family
yeah.
tradition. I know.
We'll have to look into it.
Exactly. This is fun, you know, and we've got, you know, former staff of the Obamas. Let me see who else would be good. It'd be good to look at people that, you know, have guarded the Kennedys. Anybody, I'm just looking for common people that kind of show up. And I don't know how you do that. There's got to be a search engine, you know, something that allows you, because they have like Nexus speech things and all that kind of stuff. But there has to be a way to search police people tracing. I don't know. I mean, that's your department, not mine. But this is fascinating. Another thing that's thrown in the mix too, Pianki has reminded us of this. The chef's mother is furious. She wants to know what's going on. Can you get her on the show? wouldn't that be amazing? I'm serious.
And rightfully so. Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Whoever, they're saying that it's kind of questionable or it's kind of odd that the wife hasn't come out publicly and kind of questioned anything. But yes, I did.
But mom doesn't care. Mama Bear doesn't care. Mama Bear is out there for blood. Mama Bear wants to know what's
going
on.
But of course, that's going to be considered, oh, it's conspiracy theory. There's no one really questioning.
What, not on this show? We call those ongoing investigations, Jessica.
Yes.
We don't talk about conspiracy. Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is because we actually had, do you remember when Ashley Babbitt was murdered on January 6th?
Mm-hmm.
Josie met her mother at one of these Republican complaining festivals. And this is what I call them. And she actually came on the show. So Mickey Witoff, I think is her name, was on the show. You can look it up. So you just do any of our cast shows or just through the main site, go to the top. There's a little search window in the middle. Just put Action Radio, Mickey Witoff or Ashley Babbitt's mom or something like that. That show should show, or I can probably find it for you. But we've had exactly those folks on the show. So it would not be a stretch for us to have Tafari Campbell's mom on the show.
I can definitely see what I can dig up and see if there's any sort of information of getting in contact with her.
Nothing. I'm not trying to make fun of the dead, but the intrigue of this all just I love this stuff. I mean, you know, why do people watch murder mysteries on TV? And now we've got a real one, and no one's talking about it.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
Okay. First Amendment Coalition. What do you know about them? How long have they been around?
So they're a local group there. I don't know much about them other than they're the only group. They know the area very well. That's their kind of stomping grounds. And I believe they've been around for quite a while. And so if anybody wants answers, it's going to be them. They don't seem like they're going to give up easily, so I'm going to keep up on kind of what they're being told. But as of right now, they've just had a complete shutdown from the police over there in Massachusetts, who basically just told them, you know, it's not for public record.
Exactly. Well, and I haven't seen them on the news anywhere. No one else is interviewing them. I didn't know who they were until you told me.
Yes. Yeah, so, I didn't know that there was a group either.
Yeah. Well, see, look at all these wonderful things you're finding out. I'm usually, in fact, I'm positively more intrigued by things that are not in the news than things that are. Because the most interesting to me are the things that are not in the news, and then I wonder why. So let's find out about them. Let's see if we can get them on.
Okay.
The other thing I was thinking of, this whole idea of ongoing investigations, they use it in Washington as a weapon. And if I was a member of Congress, and one of the twiddlies, the apparatchiks, the bureaucratic minions of the deep state said, well, I can't comment. They'd say, I can't comment on that. That's an ongoing investigation. I said, well, if I was a member of Congress, if I was Matt Gaetz, right, if I was sitting in the hearing, I'd say, well, we're conducting an ongoing investigation right now, and you have to tell us. That's not an option. You know, I said, this is what Congress does. This is a function of Congress to conduct investigations. And how do we know your ongoing investigation is going properly if you don't tell us what's going on? So where did this idea come from? This has been around for, I don't know, a few decades now, that as soon as it's like the get out of jail free card only for bureaucrats. I don't have to say
it's
anymore if I say
pleading
ongoing investigation. Yeah, that's
it's
a really
like
good way to put it.
It's like pleading the fifth, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going to answer your question because I don't care, and you can't make me. Nya, nya, nya. Do you know where this came from, or where it started, or do you know the origins of that's an ongoing investigation, I can't comment on it?
You know, I think a lot of these terms that wind up being used quite often to kind of pass the buck or to change the subject, like you're saying, an ongoing investigation. It's kind of something that it's just a mechanism that they've kind of relied on. And because the media and people, you know, their colleagues or the opposition accepts it and doesn't do any pushback or have any pushback. It's just kind of taken on a life of its own.
Hmm. Do you know any case where anybody in Congress has done that and said, I don't care if it's an ongoing investigation. We need to know now to make sure that what you're doing, what is ongoing is right.
Sure. You will have the Matt Gaetz or, you know, the Rand Pauls, you know, push back, but do you really ever see them get the answers or an answer other than some blanket, very, you know, vanilla response? No.
No.
I mean, that's why we are where we are.
Yeah.
That's why we
well,
are
what
we
what
are
action
because...
what action do you think they should take? What would be some good ideas they could do?
So I think when it comes to things, for instance, the ongoing investigation, sure, there's an, okay. Well, with this investigation here, with Tafari Campbell's death, and I believe the coalition has already stated this, okay, you can't rule something an official accident or have a ruling on something and still have, and still saying it's an ongoing, it's one or the other. Okay.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah. You can't eat it too. This is a cake and eat it too defense. Well, it's an ongoing investigation, but yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we can't comment on it, but.
And I think
they've already pushed back.
Exactly. And they've also pushed back with the fact that we understand dealing with, you know, who's involved, the Obamas, you know, a former president. We understand that.
Oh, that just
whatever
stop
the report
with is. Trump.
No, but what we would. I think the coalition has even said we're okay looking at records, public records that are naturally going to have redactions, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
But even that has not been well received or has been allowed. So,
yeah, and homicide doesn't come under executive privilege. it's not a standard operation of the president. So you can't claim that.
It doesn't.
You know, it's not a document thing.
Yeah.
We lost a person. We didn't lose a document. You know, we didn't, we're not, you know, this is so wild. But I was thinking back to the investigations in Congress. Do you know of any reason why they don't move to hold these witnesses in contempt of Congress when they say it's an ongoing investigation? I mean, that was one of the things I thought they could do or take some other action or cut their budget or anything else you can think of. They just don't take any action.
Exactly. And okay. I think that's a huge question. Why, what's happening behind closed doors, what's happening when the public isn't seeing, you know, the media or the, you know, the public. I kind of want to say that a lot of these trials or, you know, whatever the situation is that we see from Congress on TV.
Right.
It's almost just a patronizing to the media or sorry, to the American public for people who are interested to kind of show that something is happening. Most people don't understand what is happening.
They're not doing.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
But I can't imagine if somebody said, I'm going to hold them in contempt. I can't imagine Congress actually abiding by such a, even though it should be correct, because that's how it should. There's a whole policy and procedure. I just don't, they're not, it's not used.
Democrats don't have a problem.
Know why.
They impeached Trump on a voice vote with no hearings, no investigation, no actual charges, no evidence. They just said, who wants to impeach Trump? And all Democrats said, we do. Okay. And they took a vote.
Yeah. And it is definitely a one-sided deal.
Oh, but the Republicans, there's a reason I call them the gelding old party. Because they don't do anything. You know,
I just had this conversation actually over the weekend with a couple friends, and I said, right or wrong, I'm going to give you know credit where credit is due when it comes to the Democrats, right or wrong, and they could have possibly some infighting going on, but it is very little and very short lived, because whatever they do. They stick together.
Yep.
The Republican Party, they will infight, they will split. It's like a
openly.
House divided upon
right
itself.
Right there on TV.
And it's like, good Lord, we need to get it together, you know?
Well,
I mean,
that raises an interesting question, speaking of getting it together. Mm-hmm. So my Congressman Matt Gaetz is allegedly, mm-hmm. hasn't done it yet, putting mm-hmm. forward a motion to have Kevin McDeepstate, as we call him around here, vacate the speakership. Yeah, I think that's a good title.
Yes.
It's hard to say, though, Kevin McDeepstate.
But even
Gaetz
said it's going to be a difficult process.
Uh-huh. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. I would like to think because Gaetz involved, and he's a mover and a shaker, shall I say.
Mm-hmm.
He will, and his voice is very loud. I believe it probably will move a little bit. I highly doubt it'll be achieved, but that's just me.
I think that's the one I'm talking to. So yeah, you can't speak for anybody else. So
yeah, but like I said,
personal opinions. Personal opinion is perfectly valid here. Yeah. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. I definitely think, Matt will keep it alive as much as possible. Gaetz will, but I can't imagine them getting that united in the Republican Party to actually get that achieved.
Yeah, there's so many weenies. it's a huge problem, you know. But I remember when Matt Gaetz used to be on my show every week, and mm-hmm. we talked about things. He was a doer then. I mean, he was active, and then he became a star and started wearing hair gel, and we haven't heard from him mm-hmm. since. And he became a talker. I mean, he sounds great in the hearings, but I don't think he's put forward any bill to cut any major departments. I'm talking about like huge departments. I don't think he's done anything to, cite the DOJ, especially Garland, for contempt of Congress or move to impeach them with an official motion. I mean, they talk about it, but they don't actually do it. They can talk about contempt of Congress charges, but they don't do it. The last thing I remember Matt Gaetz doing, and this is the week I was fired, actually, we wrote a bill on the air that was making history. It's the first bill we'd actually written on the air, mandating the citizenship question on the census so that as the census takers went out, they had to ask if the people they were interviewing were American citizens. And took it to Matt Gaetz. He reported favorably about it just a few days later. So he wrote the bill on a Thursday, got on our website on a Friday, got it to him that Saturday morning. And by that Tuesday, he'd reported back favorably that he was taking it to Washington and this is a great bill. That's the old Matt Gaetz. That's how fast he works. Took it to the Trump White House, took it to Congress, House Freedom Caucus. Trump decided he wanted to do regulations instead, went to the Supreme Court, and they overruled it. But he took that bill right to Congress. So we wrote it and got it into Congress in 5 days. That's the old Matt Gaetz. The new Matt Gaetz doesn't come on the show. Okay? And now he just talks. So now he's become like everybody else. He's got seduced by the dark side. And he doesn't do what he used to do when he first got there. I can play the show for you. I can play it for you right now. I've still got it on my audio.
I know.
For
I completely believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my question to you is, have you ever reached out to MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene?
I actually met her.
With any of your...
Briefly. Yep. She was at a campaign thing with Matt Gaetz. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've called the office several times. I've emailed. But unless you're a constituent, the hardest thing to do is to get a hold of a member of Congress if you're not a constituent. Now, senators are different because they're statewide. So Rick Scott might be able to be reached. I've heard – I know people that know him, but that hasn't happened yet. But as far as MTG, no, I have not. But you can.
That is true. Yes.
You know, feel free.
Yes.
Give it a shot.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't even get a hold of Matt Gaetz now, and I've been to his office. I know his staff. I've emailed him and staff I know in Washington because we've been working together for years, and nothing. It's just we have all these ideas. Everything from, like I say, I mean, he's had our vaccine product liability bill for over 2 years because I wrote it over 2 years ago. He's had our big tech censorship bill over 2 years. That one's over 2 years old. Both of these bills would give us parallel freedom and contain two industries that need to have their liability brought back. And I'm not talking about massive regulations or a budget or new departments or hiring people. Most of our bills, you'll notice, don't cost anything. They don't have a budget in them because you don't need it. Once you open them up to liability, the national trial lawyers will provide all the enforcement that we need, you know, for billion-dollar settlements. But he hasn't mentioned one of those. And yet he took the mandatory citizenship question on the census to Congress and the president back in 2018. So what happened to Matt Gaetz?
I think that's the question for every politician that starts off and eventually gets big in, whether it's, in Congress at all, What is it that when they get to Washington, D.C., my opinion is that they're in the pocket, you know what I mean? Like they're being backed by, it comes down to money. It comes down to power. Obviously we know that.
Well, he's got his seat. His seat's not in danger. People try to run against him. The Democrats is laughable. And Republicans were hopeless the ones that ran against him. So he doesn't have to worry about his seat. He doesn't have to worry about being representing the first congressional district of Florida. He's got that.
But does he? Because in this next thing, which the next story, if we can get to it at some point, if we don't, we can definitely talk about it on Monday. But AOC is a prime example of somebody taking their seat for granted. That's how she got in.
Oh, okay. So the person ahead of, the one who was there took it for granted. Yeah,
yeah, it was supposed to be a safe seat. She was kind of a joke looked at, and she ended up staying in the race. And
she's really intelligent. I think she's got this bluff image. She's trying to fool people, but I've watched her in hearings. You look into her eyes, there's a brain back there. There's somebody who's highly, highly intelligent. Yes, she may have been a bartender. Yes, all these other things. But she was selected for a reason. So
yes.
I don't underestimate AOC for a second. I'm trying to get her on the show because our progressive reporter, Bianca Von Krieg, I think they're either friends or they're in contact. I'd love to have AOC on the show, but I'm not going to underestimate her for a second.
Not at all. I don't think any of the Democrats should be underestimated.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's very true,
to be honest,
too.
You know?
Yeah. You had another topic. Did you want to get to that while we have time? I think we've covered the chef. That story is not going away. That one will be back. So,
and this one's this one's not much of a – I mean, there is definitely some questioning, but it's why candidates stay in the race when they're really a long shot, or what can also be known as paper candidates, right?
Paper candidates. I haven't heard that term. Explain that. It makes sense.
A paper candidate is just basically somebody who will have their name on the ballot, whether they have enough.
Why?
And they're kind of just thrown in the. They're either put in there by a group to throw off the main candidate, or they put themselves in for a number of reasons. The top three of those being, and this is according to Dr. Bose over at Hofstra University, obviously bring attention to their specific platform. That could be climate change. That could be border security. Whatever the situation is, they want to bring more attention to whatever it is that they are passionate about. Another reason is steering policy agenda, and that's by putting pressure on the more established candidates in the race and forcing them to answer where they stand on topics that candidate is possibly steering away from or really doesn't want to touch on. Kind of.
And that's a good reason,
to
actually.
Sit on the fence.
I've seen candidates. I remember Pappy Cannon was famous for that. Yeah, Pappy Cannon knew he was never going to be president, but he moved the entire debate to the conservative side, much more so than it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, and then number two, the third one is because sometimes, oddly, like AOC, they do end up winning against all odds. So those are the top three that were kind of researched and studied. There's other
Where'd
reasons,
you find that?
Obviously.
Where'd you find that?
An article.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
An article.
Article?
And,
okay.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. So I was looking in it because, I mean, people have their own opinions. This was the one that was like, okay, let me find three that have been studied and researched, and then we can go into other reasons. So some other reasons are obviously notoriety, popularity, public image. According to a recent Al Jazeera report, big personalities that come along with big accounts, they're not really having to worry about campaign money necessarily. They kind of just want to, you know, they're – possibly narcissists or
ego,
just want the attention.
Ego,
and they don't need the money. They can back themselves. Right. Obviously, we know serial primary candidates.
There was one in California.
They're always going to be in it.
Steyer. Ed Steyer? But he's Steyer. He funded a bill to create, to split California into six different states. One of them was San Francisco and Silicon Valley. They're the richest, enclave on the planet.
Yeah.
And then he put all the poor people in the middle, Devin Nunez's district, like Fresno, he put all the people that have been cut off from water. And then it was, they had like the LA state, I actually had an article I'll send you. I split it into three states, North, Central, and South, which I thought would have been kind of interesting.
That's what I agree with.
Oh, okay, good. So I'll send you the article. It's on Canada Free Press. Now, do you write? Do you have articles that we can look at?
I do. You know, that's one thing that I didn't really – I mean, I can do it. It's just not necessarily something I really got into.
Substack.
I guess to answer your question,
start a Substack column. Yeah, I'll post them. But we have a writer's page too, but start a Substack column.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm getting some of my older articles from Canada Free Press and some other places. I'm writing new ones.
I'll take a look at it.
But I have a new bill I'm considering, the Citizenship Correction Act, which is going to take all the illegals that were born here to parents who are not legally, were not American citizens at the time, and had their citizenship corrected. I had Christina Bob said, you can't do that. I'm like, sure we can. If you're given something that you're never supposed to be given, we're not taking away anything. We're correcting it. And she says, no, those people won't have a country. And I said, well, we can give them a permanent resident status without citizenship. She didn't like that idea. I do like that idea. So that might be something, you know, future commentary. Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree. I would say this. I would agree with Bob on that only because obviously she's a lawyer, but also you can't leave somebody
that doesn't,
I mean, yes, you can figuratively, like speaking, you can, but
right.
How fair is that? Correct. Because obviously they were able to get away with it.
Well, how fair is it to Americans when you have, you know, chain migration of several generations of people, you know,
yes.
So that would be my counter argument. Yeah. Okay.
Sure. And completely. I think there's arguments on both sides, but yes, I definitely see her side of it as far as you can't leave somebody nationless. Yeah. And I know you do. Yeah. Okay.
No,
and
I didn't
so
say
then
they wouldn't be nationless.
Serial...
No, they get their parents' citizenship. Oh, so then the question is, can we only go back one generation?
Their...
Right. So in other words,
sure.
Can we go back one generation? And then all those other folks that came in with that mistakenly given American citizenship, we're going to change their status too. To that,
but Americans, okay, so we could do, let's just say that was to pass, and we could do that on our end. Those countries don't have to accept them as, because they weren't born technically on their ground.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's a good point.
You know what I mean? You might have a problem doing the return, should I say.
Yeah. So then the question is, how do we discourage? No, they could, this is a mess. I mean, this one is a total mess. There's no easy way out of this one.
Get into humanitarian laws.
But those don't apply.
You know, then you're
kind of
creating refugees. Sure. No,
I see it on
both sides.
Right, but we can't reward people for coming here. How about the birth tourists? You know, the folks from China and Russia that fly in, give birth, and go home. And then they bring in five generations
birth
of families.
Tourism.
So birth tourism. So we have to have a way to discourage, have to have a way to put a penalty on that so that it never happens anymore. And the best way I'm thinking of doing is correcting the citizenship.
With.
Okay. So you have to do it immediately, but we have to go back at least, I don't know, at least one generation. You know, that would be Kamala Harris, for example, who was born to illegal alien parents. They weren't in the country legally when she was born here.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that, and look what happened. Then she ends up being a fraud vice president from a coup.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got somebody whose parents weren't legally in the country. She was given citizenship illegally. Right. And now she's in the vice president's illegally because she got there by a coup.
Sure.
She's one of the luckiest people on the planet. But this is what happens when you don't correct the citizenship. Now, I was thinking there should be a way for these folks, once they have had their citizenship corrected to either their previous country or no status, they should be able to apply as immigrants. And if they're judged to be decent people, you know, okay.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then they're going to be permanent residents. But it ends. They can't bring in more people. They can't have more Americans. So we need to have a status. We need to come up with a new status. Oh, this would be a great bill for you to help me write. This would be fun. But we need a new status for people that are having their citizenship corrected because they were never supposed to be Americans, as far through the chain we can, that will allow them to stay here if this is the only country they've ever lived in. But they can't, you know, they'd have to apply to be American citizens like anybody else and stand in line.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be a penalty.
See,
so we're not going to take them away from the country, but they're going to have a penalty, even though it's no fault of their own. They should still apply to be citizens, and then we can judge accordingly. What do you think?
Sure. I'd have to look more into it.
Yeah, I have to also.
But
I'm,
I mean,
I'm just,
the idea
I'm just formulating
of it
the
and allowing...
Yeah.
Yes. The idea of it, I support in the sense of I don't think that people should be rewarded for doing bad things, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
breaking laws.
Mm-hmm.
How we go about that in retroactively,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that would be kind of how I
it's
would
a
have
mess.
To.
Because it gets an ex post facto and things
yeah.
like that. But in other
words,
you
just need to nip it in the bud.
Right. And but I would use the same principle that if you go to your bank ATM mm-hmm. and ask for $20 and it gives you $2,000, you know, you don't get to keep the extra money because you only asked for $20.
Yeah, yeah.
Bank made, you know, the
yeah.
machine made a mistake. You got to return the money, right? Well, in the same way, if you're given citizenship that
mm-hmm.
never should have been given because it's not the law, it's not in the Constitution, the 14th Amendment specifically prohibits people from, you know, because the 14th, you know, citizenship, you know, it says that you're born, you know, naturalized Americans, you know, that it says that, you know, you have to be subject to our jurisdiction, which means you can't be subject to another country. And that it's
yeah.
a citizenship jurisdiction. So the 14th Amendment prohibits
sure.
birthright citizenship. So it's always been it's been
sure.
prohibited since the end of the Civil War. That's where it gets interesting. All right. I want to get back real quick
yeah.
to the goobers. And that's what
okay.
that's short
so
for
really
for
quickly, because I just
containers.
Have a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, I know.
I just
yeah,
have
right.
a couple more things and then I could wrap it up.
Okay.
But ultimately, when I kind of looked at everything and kind of made obviously my own determination when it comes to the current presidential elections and candidates,
mm-hmm.
obviously we know some are looking to have a chance at a cabinet position for whoever ends up winning the
mm-hmm.
presidency. I believe most of them, though, are hoping Trump is out at some point eventually.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of like bump up and split those votes. Some are testing the waters for future runs. They know that
mm-hmm.
they don't have a chance and you know what, but they're going to see how, you know, how popular do people like them?
Nobody. They're not popular at all. It's really funny. Yeah.
And then the last two is like, you know, we obviously know of some of them getting media careers, public careers that actually end up paying off.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, but not least, which I think is possibly one of the bigger points, campaigns are business. Yes, they take
mm-hmm.
a lot of money to run, but ultimately they can be big money makers that you can employ family, friends. So,
oh, okay.
Kind of
oh, yeah, Divine
wealth.
Family, classic one. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, 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 yes.
Who's funding these people? Are they all different sources? Is it the Republican Party doing it? Where's the money coming from for all these different people to run?
Very interesting. Obviously, we know PACs. There are some
right.
PACs that are behind some of the bigger ones.
Is it like a holding company
them,
PAC?
Yeah.
Is it like one PAC that has like six other PACs and you don't hear about the main one? You know, is it like PAC money laundering?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, just curious.
Believe me, I don't doubt that there's a possibility of that happening.
Uh-huh.
So PACs, obviously, you know, appealing to certain donors who are kind of on the fence since the previous candidates, the Never
Global
Trumpers.
PAC.
There's those, yes.
Global PAC. Yeah, yeah.
There definitely is.
Yeah.
And then some of them have their own money because they've been in, they're either well-established in what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Vivek Ramaswamy.
You know what I mean, him, right? Did you hear the shows we did on him? I don't trust him
yes,
for a second.
Yes,
he's
yes,
a total
yes.
fraud. Oh, my God. Hey, go
yes.
ahead. I'm sorry.
But, I
yeah.
mean, he does come from, you know what I mean? He doesn't... The money part of it isn't as, I mean, it's always important, but maybe not as important to him as maybe, you know,
that's right. He has
candidate.
His own money. Yeah. You pointed out to me off the air that he has his own.
Well,
I was wondering where his money
yeah,
came from. Right.
Exactly. And then, yeah, so PACs, donors.
I'm just curious if they're commonalities. You know, it's like Chappaquiddick, you know, police descendants that are still there on Martha's Vineyard. Yeah. With the Kennedys, yeah, and the Obamas,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I wonder if he's going to pick up a Boston accent, yeah. Obama come out talking like this. But I just, you know,
yeah.
it seems strange to me that all these people are running. The one that I think is the most interesting, and he's advertising too much on One American News, Doug Burnham, the governor of North Dakota.
Yes.
He had some controversial things to say at the last debate. Either you pointed this out to me or I heard it from somewhere. We got about a minute left. Do you remember what he said or what his stand was?
I do not. It wasn't me, yes.
Okay, I think it was either a Ukraine thing or a climate change or something like that. But yeah, yeah. Okay, we should probably pick this up next week, because I'm curious who these individuals are, why they're running, you know, who's funding them, why they think they can do this. And you're right, absolutely right, because Christina Bob confirmed what you just said, that they're secretly, some of them are secretly hoping that Trump gets indicted so they can run. That's pretty
scummy.
Oh, I think
the majority. Nikki Haley,
oh, really?
Chris Christie, you know.
What does that say about their character in the last 30 seconds?
I told you. I think there are some snakes.
Okay. Good points. All right. Well, Jonathan's not here yet, but if you have to go, I understand, because it is the top of the hour. Jessica, this has been fabulous. Thank you. Thank you for another amazing hour. I really appreciate it.
Yes, and so I will get on, like we talked on the top of the hour, the proposed laws. I'll take a look at those, and we can hit that up next week.
Yeah, play a report. In fact, you can even interview me. Wouldn't that be interesting? Whatever you want to do, just have fun. But I think the Constitutional Amendment, because that is so controversial and would profoundly affect everybody in terms of wealth creation for here I'm lobbying you, for you know, regular citizens, and a total destruction of the Fed and the elimination of inflation, so we wouldn't be transferring our money. They wouldn't be stealing our money at 2%, 3%, 5%, 9% a year. Anyway, have a great week.
All right, you too. Thanks so much. Okay,
thank you
talk
too.
To you later.
Right.
Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Bye now.
Bye.
And that's Jessica Rivera, who does the Rivera Report Monday mornings. I think it's a great way to kick it off, because she's wonderful to talk to, and just to be able to go right to these topics and just leap right into Monday without me, you know, ranting for an hour, I think it's much more fun. Let me get the contact information, and I'll be right back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. What is the law? Are we under the rule of law? Does that mean those who make the laws rule us? Aren't we under the consent of we the people, where we write the laws we consent to be governed by and rule the government? Who is the law? Is it the Supreme Court, the President, the Congress, the states? Can you take the law into your own hands? Is there any time the law isn't in your own hands? In a country under a coup d'etat and a stolen government, there is no law, but there are a whole bunch of things being done in the name of law. And now, with this state of confusion and contradiction, let's try to find a way out together by using the law. Because if our government of the people, by the people, and for the people means anything, it means we the people are the law. And now, to try and make some sense of all this and use the law as it was meant to be used, to find our way back to freedom, it's time now for The Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. Yeah, I think I had it a little bit loud, so I had to knock it back, you know, with all the other ones. But I'll check on the podcast and make sure it's all nice and balanced. Good morning, Jonathan. How you doing?
Good morning. Can you hear me clearly?
Oh, yeah. Actually, this is really good. Yeah.
When I looked at listened to the recording from last week, it started out with a bad connection somehow, so I want to make sure.
Well, it does.
So, yeah.
Sometimes, that's just technical difficulties. We get those all the time. You know, sometimes if I get too many websites at the bottom of my computer, it starts to scratch the signal a bit. So, yeah, there's always a little
limitations.
Right, so but
yep. What part technical of the building I have to stand in?
Well, you know, you should. I mean, you're on the air every week, and you've been on for years. You know, you might want to consider getting a Yeti Blue mic and a little headset. And just doing it like I do, right on through the internet.
I'm not sure. I just haven't figured out how to do that. But
they plug in. There's nothing to figure. The beauty of them, the headset plugs into the mic. The mic plugs into the computer. They all have USB ports.
Oh, yeah.
It's the easiest thing in the world.
Something for that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll do that. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's that easy. And then you can do your own show. And now the legal world with Jonathan Mosley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, I'm looking here. I'm looking for a date on.
This is the wrong show for that.
Can't
you
stand
need,
it when they don't.
You need Zeus or what? No, I'm sorry.
No. I mean a date on the article.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like, tell me next that you know, you like sunsets and walks on the beach, and I was going to refer you to Dorothy.
Of course. I need to take a lot of long walks on the and lose some weight on the beach. But last Tuesday, the news came out that that the Bidens received $260,000, another $260,000.
That's like chicken feed for them. That's not even unless you have like that extra zero, there's no point, right? And that's just, you know.
Yeah, I do kind of wonder what kind of people burns through tens of millions of dollars.
Where to go?
I don't understand. They said they'll never find it. So I assume.
Well, that's not true. First of all, they have to file taxes, and they're also forensic accountants. They'll tell you exactly where it is. In fact, the government's own accountants can probably tell you in about 10 minutes where it is. But here's did you ever hear my plan? That all the money from the Biden crime family needs to be civil asset forfeited and then given to all the January 6th prisoners. That's my plan.
It could be. Those things, again, I keep saying, people say, why can't we do this or why can't we do that? And the answer is because they don't want to.
Exactly.
There is no lack of ability or legal authority for the government to do the things that they need to do. It's a lack of will. And I interpret what I'm seeing over the last several years, especially the Republicans saying, acting like, saying all the right things, what Steve Bannon calls performative. I don't like the term because it's vague, but it's kabuki theater, I guess, which I don't really know what kabuki theater actually is, but it's all this stuff is an act.
Yeah.
And, a 7-year-old girl singing something for their parents.
My way.
Yeah, something like that. And then we're not happy. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what? I mean, you didn't expect us to actually do those things, did you? Like, what? I mean, they're like, it's like, you see like the wheels turning and the struggling. And like, nobody actually does the things that they say they're going to do.
That's
what's
why they hate Trump so
you?
Much.
So,
yeah. No, that's a good point.
Right. And of course, people want to say that we have that there's a cult of Trump and completely ignore the fact that we were spitting mad at them, for decades before Trump ever ran for office. So how do you explain it's a Trump cult when Trump wasn't even in politics when we were trying to tar and feather these people and send them out on a rail? But anyway, could they do all these things? Of course they could. There's probably even some, the trouble is that many financial things, of course, didn't go through New York, and that's a lost cause, or the federal things. But there are even some state attorney generals who could get in on the act, but no, that's not like we don't do that. It isn't, it's like, I think I'm going to go, I don't know if I have any white suits, but it's after Labor Day. I'm going to go wear a white suit after Labor Day. I mean, because like Republicans are like, why don't you do something to hold these people accountable? Oh, that's just not done. That's just not, that would be breaking norms.
We just talked about
that. Yeah, let's break, smash some norms.
Yeah.
We
just talked about that in the last hour when I was talking to Jessica about the whole idea of, the get out of jail free card. That's part of an ongoing investigation. And my claim is if I were in Congress at the time, I would say, okay, well, we're doing an ongoing investigation right now. It's called a hearing, congressional hearing.
Well,
so
they started
oversight. Yeah. Who oversight on
last,
you?
Last
what the hell's
week,
doing?
In the last couple of hearings, Uh-huh. Yeah, in the last couple of hearings, a couple of the congressmen started to push back on that. And they
really?
Said,
oh,
I can't,
be still my beating heart. Tell me what happened.
I mean, they said, I mean, I forget who it was. I think it was, it wasn't Gates, although it could have been, but doggone, again, I'm not great with names. But one of the people came back and said, I said, oh, I can't talk about that. And he's like, no, you're going to talk about that. This is the Congress. You know,
we have
an independent duty to to do oversight.
Uh-huh.
And I forget exactly how the – I think it was the Merrick Garland one
okay.
about a week or 2 days ago.
See, that's
and,
exactly
and
true.
They,
yeah.
And they said, it's like, look, your policy – well, it's the policy of the department not to talk about these ongoing things. Like, your policy is not in the Constitution. I'm using my wording, but this is pretty much what they were saying. They're saying, you know, I don't care about your policy. We have a constitutional power and obligation to investigate these things. Your policy, you know, can go stuff it.
Meaningless.
Again, my words, because I don't remember the exact word for word, but they were starting to get irritated by that, and they should.
It's about time. It's been, what, 30 years of get out of jail free? You know, they've been using this excuse. Yeah.
But anyway, so the point is that they come out with, on Tuesday, they come out with news that there were two, they found, they released information from bank records. And this is like, you know, the governments are saying, what they qualify as evidence, I'm not sure how to pin them down, but somebody should say, what is your standard for evidence? They say there's no evidence. You know, it's enough evidence that would get anybody else convicted, and put sent to jail for 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they came out with bank records of this, of money coming from China to the Bidens, to one of their LLCs. So naturally, you know, we've seen the rule that when there's news of Biden criminality or bad news for the Bidens in some sense, it must, within 24 hours, there's the deep state pulls some legal attack on Trump. So that the criminality of the Democrats is knocked off the news.
Hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Frankly, I tried to get Larry Klayman or someone else to work on a lawsuit because basically, you know, I consider that to be politically corrupt. But the more you think about it, it's obstruction of justice.
Absolutely.
What they're doing when they do this is flat, you know, it's straight up obstruction of justice is that, you know, that where they're trying to investigate crimes. And as soon as there's a major development, they try to switch the subject to some bogus thing about Trump. You know what I'm talking about. This is not news, right?
Well, in fact, do you have some the big example, of course, was just this first impeachment hearing, which I want to talk about a little bit in terms of they're doing the wrong hearing. They should be doing the stolen election hearing. I think this is just a cover-up for it. But if you listen to all the Democrats, and I can't do it. So what I recommend people do, this is why I post the hearings, but I say wait till it's over.
You can't do what? You can't listen to it?
No, I can't listen to Democrats. No, they. I just want to throw up and my place would be a mess. So what I do is I say don't listen to it when it's live. Just listen to it after it's over and skip the Democrats. And then it actually is like a really good hearing.
For citizens, we should also just make sure people know that C-SPAN – c-span.org you can watch a lot of congressional business live. They've got three channels. I mean, ostensibly, channel one and channel two are the House and the Senate, and channel three is like other stuff or overflow or hearings or things. So when you say people should listen, people should know that it's you can't predict that everything is going to be on C-SPAN on their website. But pretty much, you can catch things if nowhere else.
Oh, the big
maybe
hearings.
Sometimes
are.
People put it up on YouTube. Yeah, sometimes
they don't have national donors, but they'll have the big hearings. Will be on C-SPAN.
Right.
That's what I say. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you tell people to, you know, they should listen, it's you know, the, you have a wonderful resource in being able to do that. And some of those events and hearings are still up on C-SPAN for years. So it's a good resource to be aware of.
Yeah. And some of the best moments are missed. I made a video of the seven most important minutes of the Kavanaugh hearing, and that was an exchange between Lindsey Graham, who actually was good at this point, and Brett Kavanaugh talking about Roe v. Wade. It's incredible what they were saying. Some of it was really good, and some was absolutely horrifying. When they talked about the only way to override a Supreme Court opinion is with a constitutional amendment. That is patently absurd. That's insane. Where did they get that ridiculous idea? But that came out. Saying, well, you know, only the Supreme Court could overrule Roe v. Wade unless you had a constitutional amendment.
It's what all the popular people say.
But it's irrational. It's irrational. Why would you have, you know, five members of the Supreme Court be able to overrule three-quarters of the states and two-thirds of the Congress? That's ridiculous.
Right.
And it's not a co-equal branch of government then. In fact, it's the Supreme branch of government.
Right. It's a misreading of the Constitution, but it's the popular view, so you're not going to find any Republican doing any independent thinking or anything like that.
For sure.
So here we have this information coming out, and again, at some point, somebody's got to say, no, this isn't just political skullduggery. This is obstruction of justice. Hmm. The Merrick Garland, the FBI, all these people, they are committing crimes by hiding a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just, you know, that's not just something that we can put under the category, oh, that's just politics. No, if tons of statutes about obstruction of justice in various ways, intimidating witnesses, they're trying to say that by Trump, for example, Bill Barr, as someone on Facebook described him, a backstabbing idiot. And I said, well, I knew he was a backstabber, but I didn't. You know, I'm learning that he's an idiot as well.
Uh-huh. I wasn't aware of that. That's new, but yeah, okay.
But he, the thing is, if he goes out there, trashes Trump, and Trump, who is running for office, comments on it. And they say, well, that is – in fact, that's one of the things we didn't get to last week, now that I remember, is that it is the attempt to put a gag order on the defendant who is running for president.
Right.
An extraordinary conflict. Well, let's get back to that in a little bit. So anyway, so he I got confused myself. But the thing is that this is obstruction of justice. It's not just the thing is they're claiming that he's intimidating witnesses, which is absurd because these are people who are in the public eye attacking him in the public eye, and he's responding. But what the Department of Justice is doing, what the FBI is doing, what the Democrats are doing, is they actually are trying to shape testimony, intimidate witnesses,
sure.
Say which team do you want to play on? You know, are you you better get on the back of the wagon because this is the winning team. So it is somebody actually needs to file a RICO, Racketeering Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act, civil lawsuit based on the multiple acts of obstruction of justice. Like I said, I tried to tell Larry Klayman to do it. He's doing some other things. He's always doing something, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't. People
so
ask
what would you, if you had to list the places where it's a specific obstruction of justice, just to kind of sum it up for everybody, what, I think it's like three of them you had, where would you claim obstruction of justice by the Democrats? There's the Trump.
Well, like
charges.
I say, every time they're trying to investigate, the most spectacular example is that every time they're trying to investigate the crime, they change the subject. They try to hide the crime by making a bogus indictment or something like that against Trump.
So, but in the hearings themselves, because they can do that, they can say what they want in their time. But I don't know if that's necessarily a crime. I think it's just a tactic, which is very successful, by the way.
But obstruction of justice does not require it to be in the courthouse. I mean, if you know, if I go down right. to the Joyzy neighborhood, you know, and let it be known that you know I'm so happy that our guys around here are loyal and they're not gonna talk to the police. I'd hate to have something happen to anyone as a witness, like happened to Fingers 2 years ago,
right.
Where they found him in the swamp. Those kinds of things are classic obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, every time they try to investigate, the DOJ withholds the information, like we were mm-hmm. just talking about.
Yep.
And it's become more and more clear that the FBI and blocked any investigation of Joe Biden. That when the line officer, rank and file agents wanted to investigate this or that, they mm-hmm. were told they can't. You know, it's like the same thing as election fraud. I found there was no evidence
yeah.
of election.
That was on my next.
Well,
my
let
next
me finish.
That's the biggest problem there. Yeah.
Let me say something else because I have a meme on my for Facebook, which is that there was no evidence of election fraud because I didn't find any evidence of election fraud because I didn't look for any election
yep.
evidence
oh,
of any
yeah.
election fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's going on with the Democrats' crimes and the Biden crimes is that we found no evidence because we refused to look,
mm-hmm.
and we tried to stop everybody else from looking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something called misprison of a felony, which is a felony.
Ooh, what's that?
It means that if you are kind of is limited to a government official, but more precisely, it's limited to somebody who has the authority or ability to report or act upon the existence, the commission of a felony, and they don't, so that they can be charged with covering up the felony. It's called
so if they say lack of evidence and there's mountains of evidence, that's actually a crime to say there's lack of evidence when they know differently.
Well, that would be a logical but more difficult case, because
okay.
at least they could say they looked at it. But if they become aware of a felony and they did nothing about it,
mm-hmm.
In a way that they would be covering up the crime,
okay.
it's a felony called misprision.
Yep.
There are a lot of things. So, in fact, let me connect a lot of these things together because they do connect.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, I'll jump off here and jump back as good a time as any. Is of course this congressman. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Of course, I am very sad this morning. You know that. Because the government didn't shut down. I was
where you were going to go.
I was prepared to celebrate on social media.
Yeah.
Where is the guy's name? Anyway, it's a congressional
Jamal Bowman.
Really hurt.
Jamal
yes.
Bowman.
So Jamal, okay. I have all these things open. So I can go back to them, and then there's too many things open.
Oh,
and so it becomes – so anyway, so he – during the and I don't really understand what the real thing going on, but during the shutdown theater, and I've heard some people talk about how McCarthy was made speaker on the grounds that he was going to go back to regular order. He's going to do the 13 appropriation bills, have them, according – and this is not just an ideal or an ideal. There's actually a law, the Budget Control Act, that says how this is supposed to be done. And the Congress hasn't done it in, 20, 30 years. You know, haven't followed the law. So he was supposed to have the appropriations bills on in plenty of time, and he didn't. Matt Gaetz says – there will be a motion to vacate the chair this week, because he become one of the deals he made to get the votes to become speaker was that he was going to return to regular order and not do these crazy last-minute shutdown things.
How about that?
Which, yeah. And even, of course, you know, it's like, what? Did you mean that? I didn't think you meant that. You know, be like a wife says, you know, we don't spend enough time together. We should go to the county fair this Saturday. And he goes, yeah, okay. And then, of course, Saturday comes and the guy goes out golfing and he's like, wait, you meant that? So the Republican leader, I mean, the Democrats lie too, but the Republicans are worse because they're used to having no power. And of course, maybe the reason they have no power is because of the fact that they don't use it when they get it. So he said we're going to return to regular order and not have this, you know, this shutdown drama as we do every year. And of course, he didn't do it. And you know, people like Bannon accuse McCarthy and others of having this train wreck on purpose, so they can get things shoved through that they couldn't possibly win on if they had to do a straight up vote.
Right.
It's like, I think Norm Bradford he's telling about the congressional hearing from about 100 or more years ago, where a member of Congress said on the floor, he said, "We can't. If we vote for this, the people will come here and burn the place down." You know, this is outrageous.
No, they won't.
And
no, they won't.
Well, that's not, but I'm just saying that the idea is that there are limits, and you know, so the thing is hiding what they're doing has become the number one skill and activity of the Congress is to fool the voters. So anyway, they have this shutdown, and it's moving towards a resolution. They took the funding for Ukraine out, although that will be a standalone bill.
Oh, it'll be back with the guilt
and,
with the accompanying guilt trip. Yeah.
Yeah, and but that's what they had to do. And for some reason, maybe he thought because they have the lying media, so they always think that the Republicans take the blame when the Democrats cause a shutdown. And the polling was showing is that's not happening this time. And again, we have to educate the public so that they don't think, you know. One of the biggest realities or whatever is going on is that the swamp is doing their old go-to tricks, and that always work, and they're not working.
What do the polls say? Do you have some polls on that? Because that'd be really interesting to find out.
Yeah, they did. They had some polls. I think it was Gateway Pundit or The Hill or both. By maybe a 6% advantage, the public blamed Biden and the Democrats for the
shutdown. Okay, well that's a nice
shutdown.
Change. Yeah, but the
it
building
is,
saved them.
But,
you know,
of course. The point is that they the official Washington is running on its old tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, well, you know, and like the old timers, like, well, we have this situation, no problem, just do this, it always works, and it's not working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're completely
nothing's
out of
working.
Their minds because
indicting Trump isn't working. None of these things are working. But this is fascinating. But the real problem, there's two problems. One, that McCarthy and Brandon sat down to make a deal. That's unconstitutional. The Speaker of the House does not make deals with the President. The Speaker of the House, you know, comes up with a bill for the House, and the Senate has a bill, and then they send a final bill to the President, but they don't negotiate with the President. That's blatantly unconstitutional right there. I think the House called them on that. And the second thing was they took a 6-week vacation, which I think was designed so that they couldn't have appropriations bills, so they didn't have the time for appropriations bills. So as soon as they came back, the only option was a continuing resolution or a shutdown. And the Republicans are so paranoid of a shutdown because of what happened during one of the Obama shutdowns that they can't seem to do it anymore. But the thing is, it's not a shutdown. That's a lie. Most of the government keeps going. Everybody gets paid eventually.
Part of the lie is that a year later or 7 months later or something like that, the Republicans gained seats in the House.
Oh, okay.
They had this shutdown.
Yeah.
And the media all blamed them. So here's the thing. Huh. So this Congressman Bowman, I don't know how to say his first name. It's Jamal.
Well, ask Bianchi. He'll help us pronounce it.
Well, there was. I thought I saw another name. Are you sure it's just Jamal?
That's what I remember. I could be wrong, you know. But
He pulls the fire alarm to disrupt Congress. I guess because the proceedings are heading in a direction of they're gonna resolve this, mm-hmm. The shutdown drama, mm-hmm. and the Republicans might not be blamed. I don't know. He hasn't said why it is. Now the problem
an accident. He pulled it by accident.
mm-hmm. Yeah. But this is the thing, is that you've got 1,100 January 6th defendants and counting, mm-hmm. and hundreds of them are charged with a violation of 18 U.S.C. 1512C2 mm-hmm. or K, which is an attempt, which is to corruptly obstruct, influence, or impede an official proceeding.
Exactly.
And from January 6th, now there were a few of them, out of approximately 10,000 who were violent. There's like a picture of, people trying to break through.
Yeah, but how many of those? But those were Black Lives Matter and Antifa and hired thugs and Ray Epps. And you look at all the people in those videos. So the people, especially when Ashley Babbitt was killed, there's two guys breaking windows. I guarantee you those were operatives, because all the other Trump supporters, first of all, Trump supporters didn't want to go into the building. Those that did usually walked between the ropes and were taking selfies, and even Shaman Man, I've forgotten his name, Kresley, got an escorted tour.
Chensley.
So Chensley gets a tour of the place, and all this stuff comes out later. But no, the Trump supporters weren't doing anything, I guarantee you, because they started their internal riot right as Arizona came up to be considered for the battleground state for the two sets of electors. So it was well planned, but they've never identified the guys that were breaking the window when Michael Byrd shot Ashley Babbitt, which he has to answer for.
Right. Well, the thing is, these people, many of them are charged with, although there is a misdemeanor version that I've been putting out there, because better to have an up to 6 months misdemeanor than a 20-year felony. But hitting a lot of these people with the felony of obstructing justice, of obstructing an official proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, and the question is that this statute has never been used in this way. It's vague and ambiguous. Today, attorney Tom Renz and Brad Geyer, with an undisclosed amount of help from me, which, in the 50-year book, as Christine puts it, it can be told. It is a Supreme Court brief in favor of one of the January 6th defendants, Jake Lang.
Heard about
where
him.
That exact was thing is being challenged.
He called in from prison, by the way, which is something we started, and now everybody else seems to be copying. I heard him call into One American News from prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jake Lang is very assertive and organized and aggressive, and that's good. He's a little bit. Well, you have to understand that anybody in that, put yourself in those shoes, you're going to be a little agitated.
Try to imagine what I'd be
nervous.
I wouldn't be nervous.
Right. So,
I'd be furious.
Right. Well, that's kind of the Jake Lang is. You have to remember what's happening to these guys and how unfair it is. But in any event, so he has appealed to the Supreme Court, unfortunately, which resumes its session today.
Oh,
and he
how exciting!
Yeah, so they'll start deciding on which Americans to screw, so they'll go through this whole thing. So he has appealed, but you have to ask permission. You have to file a petition for a writ of certiorari.
Right.
And in a very rare number of cases, the Supreme Court issues a writ, which orders the lower court to send all the file and gives you the authority to file a full brief. So appealing to the Supreme Court is not automatic. you have to beg to have the Supreme Court hear your appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is kind of stupid. And really the Supreme Court could do better even with the workload, because they could take the appeal and then send it back on remand and say, look, okay, we're taking the appeal, we're sending it back to the circuit court. And we want you to brief, the following things before we send it back to us. Like, you know, you're wrong here, you're wrong there, you're wrong there, you know, whatever, you know, reconsider this and brief it, send it back to it. So they could keep these cases alive and probably torment these lawless judges below. But anyway, so that is going on, and we filed this court on the grounds that corruptly is – I mean, what does corruptly mean to you? I included in the brief –
with corruption?
The,
it's like creating a verb where there is no verb.
But they are arguing that where you corruptly – obstruct an official proceeding.
That's not a word.
Corruptly just means unlawfully. And the whole point of the brief that
corruption's a particular kind of lawlessness, because it's you know, taking gain, you know, like bribery is probably the best example of corruption. In other words, doing things that are against the law for personal gain. That's what I think of as corruption. So you can't do something corruptly. It's not a verb. It's a
all
noun.
Of the,
you know,
all of
you can
the,
engage in corruption. You know, you can be corrupt, but you can't do something corruptly. That doesn't make sense.
Well, anyway, so the brief that is arriving today, and I've got to get the lawyer to upload it electronically.
Yeah, I'll read it.
You know, points out that, first of all, corruptly, you know, in every case, and the courts, and this, it's difficult to, you know, to have the position of saying that, all those court precedents that they're citing to, they got it, they're wrong. I mean, because they're clearly wrong. And one of the main arguments in this brief is that Congress passed statute in Title 18, which is the majority of criminal statutes are in Title 18. And so they passed like 26, somebody said 50, but I found 26 times that they used the word corruptly. There are 203 statutes, 203 crimes where they use unlawfully. And there's a principle that when Congress speaks, when they choose one word in one place and another word in another place, they have to mean something different. So the courts, the prosecutions of January 6th cases, the January 6th judges and everything else have got it wrong. They're treating corruptly as just the same thing as unlawfully, when Congress chose different words for a reason.
Yep.
So
that's interesting.
That's what I hope will shake the tree with the Supreme Court. But so the thing, and we also argue that corruptly is so vague that the whole statute is unconstitutional. Cited to an article where a man was accused of corrupting a young girl. And it was clearly grooming and sexual, you know. If you were to raise,
but there are words,
you know,
for
influence
that.
The young,
it's not corruption. That's not a crime of corruption. That's I don't know, sexual assault.
Okay,
you know, a bunch of other things, but it's not a corruption.
This is the problem. It gets into the fact that there are so many different meanings of corrupt. And you know, so
well, like
you,
software
corrupt,
can be corrupt. If you have software
exactly.
that's corrupt, it's not the genuine, it's not the original article. You've got, you know, malicious software being included into it. So, but that's a thing.
Right.
There's a difference between a person being corrupt and a thing being corrupt. So a person can only be corrupt. Let's look it up. Let's see what my online wimpy leftist dictionary
says. Good
luck.
I spent months on it. But the thing is, if you look, I mean, but if you, you know, in the Bible, which I mentioned, not because necessarily everybody has to believe it, but it has widespread cultural influence on people's understanding. You know, it says that David slept, you know, died and slept with his fathers, and his flesh saw corruption.
Ooh.
You know, it means his body rotted. And another place it says that Jesus' body did not see corruption because he's risen from the dead. So if you want to know what corrupt is, does it mean, you know, the rotting of the flesh? Does it mean, you know, the rotting of your plumbing system? Does it mean that you enticed an underage girl into sex? or a life of underage prostitution? Does it mean you taught some young kid to have a life of crime, to the kid to be part of your crime plans because he's not obvious? There's so many different things that you come down to the point where nobody knows what it means. So if you read the statute and you say, did you corruptly obstruct an official proceeding or impede it or interfere with it, influence, which is just any lobbyist, it's ridiculous. Everything is to influence an official proceeding. I mean, you can't. That's a direct violation of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
So, did you corruptly obstruct, influence, or impede an official proceeding? And so everybody's trying to, so that the challenge.
Well, what's
is
an
been,
official
like,
proceeding?
What
have we defined official? Have we defined official proceeding?
No, there's been a huge fight about that, and a lot of the defense lawyers have spent a year, fighting about these things because this is the big club. This is a 20-year felony. Everybody says, well, these people, are getting all this for trespassing.
Hmm.
And this is, you have to remember that almost every one of these defendants has been charged with multiple counts, and trespassing is certainly one of them. But for hundreds of them, it's this 1512 punishable by up to 20 years. So that's why, people have been training fire on this statute, and also the fact that the DOJ is using it in ways that have never been used before. They're engaged in this prosecutorial creativity.
Well, I was just going to say, is there some penalty in law for being creative or doing things, making up your own, procedures as you go along? Or is that just something that Congress has to rein in through oversight?
the bar, of course, regulates itself. And the standards
that's
on prosecutors are higher.
Yeah.
So, but if you file, it's like, what do they say about how to fix kale? They give you a recipe for all the things to do, and then the last step is throw it in the trash. if you want to file a complaint against a prosecutor, you have to do all these things and whatever, and then they'll just throw it in the trash, and because they just never the bar, unless you're a notorious conservative, the bar protects its own. I mean, the bar supposedly is there to protect the public and the public interest. In fact, the bar is one of the greatest threats to the public interest because they're just there to be a cartel and protect their own, and pretend that they're doing something for the public interest. So anyway, so we've got this thing, and now we've got this Congressman Bowman. And the question here again is, what the hell does this statute mean? And my conclusion is, because the brief goes through all this problem and comes to the bottom line, it's like, this is a mess, which means it's unconstitutional. A statute that a person of average intelligence cannot understand what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do is unconstitutional. It's void for vagueness. And if it puts in the hands of the enforcers almost unlimited discretion to define the charge any way they want, which this does, then it's unconstitutional. It's points of it. Oh,
well,
I forgot the phrase, but it's an ambiguity to the point. That
but here's
it,
the simple
it's
way out, though. There's a simple way out of this, Jonathan. Every firearm I've ever seen has, penalty for falsely pulling an alarm, $500, $1,000, a year in jail, whatever it is. They write it right on the fire alarm. Penalty for – so why don't they just charge him with falsely pulling a fire alarm? You don't need the corruption. You don't need the motivation. You don't need any of that stuff.
But
the instruction.
But that's the point. Under their theory of what they're going after January 6th people about, they should charge him. But they won't.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, he should be charged. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that, and he should be kicked out of Congress.
Right.
That's
I'd rather see them torture the DOJ over their lying, hypocritical, dishonest approach to these entire statutes.
Well, the government's making stuff up. I'm sorry, go ahead, John. Oh, sorry, I'm
the Department of Making Stuff Up. Go ahead.
Well, no, but this is what they're doing. I mean, there has to be a way to either chop their budget, impeach, get rid of, remove, fire, or otherwise, you know, stop this process of the folks at the DOJ simply making things up so they can get rid of Trump and prevent him from running in the election. That's what all this is about. All the January 6th people are there to make sure that be made examples of, so nobody ever protests the government again. So what they're doing is purely political. So they're not operating within their authority. They're just simply making stuff up that's expedient to the current coup. So I would arrest all of them for supporting the coup, quite frankly.
But it didn't start with Trump. I mean, these outrages they're not specific and new only to Trump.
No, sorry, with the first ongoing investigation claim. There's decades of this, probably back to Hoover.
But what's happening with Trump is they're trying so hard that they're letting,
We're all watching.
The mass,
we're watching
right? We're seeing what's really going on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I got a definition for corruption, if you want a definition of corruption.
Okay.
So the first one, adjective, having or showing a willingness to act dishonestly in return for money or personal gain. That's my definition, right? Then they put evil or morally depraved. You know, then they have another one here, like you were saying, you know, corrupting an individual as a verb. You know, cause to act dishonestly. Okay, then we got that one. Then it talks about charge or debase or by making the other one here. Anyway, they talk about corrupting, like you were saying before. I think something entirely different. I think corruption is, you know, doing things for personal gain, doing illegal things for personal gain. That's what makes you corrupt. And bribery is just one example. So it's actually fairly easy to define. But if you talk about you doing things corruptly, making a verb when no verb exists, this is when they're getting into trouble. They're just weasel wording. They're using words in ways that make an advantage for them, which is probably more the point.
Right. But the problem is not that there's a lack of a definition. The problem is there's too many definitions.
That makes sense.
So at the end of the day, it means nothing. So anyway.
Okay. Hello, hello? Where'd you go? We know he's there somewhere. Did you move to a different part of the building? Ah, there you are. Now you're back.
Anyway, so the thing is, now we come back to the fact that two of the four charges against Donald Trump are the same statutes. So if it's thrown out, then two of the four counts against Trump are thrown out too.
Oh, I see. So, let's get back to this guy, Lang. What's his name? Jake Lang.
Well, he has appealed very diligently, and I'm sure at great expense.
Right.
And if we're lucky, the Supreme Court will do its job and take the case. Because and now it's kind of interesting because appeals of criminal cases usually don't ripen until after they've been convicted and after they've been sentenced.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have several months to file the appeal. The Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia is literally on the fifth and sixth floor of the same building as the trial judges. So, you know, so the
kick it upstairs.
The Court of Appeals. They're just right upstairs.
Oh, okay.
And so they go to the same. They eat at the same cafeteria and say hi and kind of like the cartoons of the. who was the guy in the cartoon?
The coyote guy. And the sheepdog. Hey, Fred.
Yeah, the end of the day, whistle blows.
Right.
And they go and they clock out at the time thing, and they say, how's the kids? You know, how are the things? You know, during the day, of course, they're trying to kill each other, and then
right. Well, they're doing their job, right? The coyote's job is to steal the sheep, and the sheepdog. Yeah, but that's such a great metaphor for life and work. I mean, you know, kids don't realize how that's the adult part of that cartoon. It's absolutely fascinating.
Right.
Yeah.
So so you have the Court of Appeals judges and the trial judges whom they're supposed to be overseeing, you know, eating at the same cafeteria, riding the same elevators, parking the same.
I was in Washington. I watched enemies sitting on the same trolley together joking. I mean, you know, it's all a show.
Right. So anyway, by the time it gets up to the Supreme Court, it would normally be years. This is happening because the government, because Judge Nichols threw out 18 U.S.C. 1512 as not being applicable to January 6th. And so their case, Jake Lang, Garrett Miller, and Joseph Fisher, their trials continued without the big felony charge.
That's obstruction.
But the government.
Right? That's the obstruction charge?
Huh?
Or the official
like, you know,
proceeding?
Okay, they say, you assaulted a police officer, which under 18 U.S.C. 111A1 means that you either assaulted, impeded, interfered with, you know, things like that. So if there's literally a case like this with, what's his name? Brad Geyer represented the guy who was photographed with his feet up on a desk in
Nancy Pelosi's
outer
desk.
Office.
Right. Yeah. I remember that. Yep.
Not Nancy Pelosi's desk at all. Just a desk in her area of the world.
I mean, I might have done that.
But anyway, so
that's something I would definitely do. So, you know, yeah.
He literally went up and said, I forgot my flag. He told the police, can I go back and get my flag? And it was loud because everybody was loud. And he kept asking because it was loud. And so that was assaulting the same statute as assaulting a police officer because he asked the question.
I was just going to say, is asking for directions assaulting a police officer or interrupting a proceeding? I was just going to ask that. That is so funny.
Right. So when you hear that all these people assaulted a police officer, if you look at the actual charges and the actual statute, if they asked, excuse me, sir, can you tell me where the bathroom is? Boom. Mm-hmm. You interfered with or impeded.
An official operation. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, are these catch-all phrases that, do you see these in many trials? It's like Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act is another misnomer, where it says that the big tech can remove anything they find otherwise objectionable. So the porno statutes, you know, lewd, lascivious, graphically violent, things like that. And then they throw in and also anything they find otherwise objectionable. That's like the catch-all. Mm-hmm. So if you can be arrested for interfering in an official proceeding, what if the police are, you know, literally killing somebody? You know, can you not? If you try and save that person's life, and they say, well, you can't do that. You interfered with a law enforcement action. You know, and it was quite clear that they're, you know, say they're like stoning somebody to death. Let's make a really obvious example. Something that would never be justified under any circumstance. And if you stop that, you know, then you say, well, wait a minute, you interfere with the proceeding. Well, let's make it really crazy. Well, let's say you got some gun control advocate and you save the life of a police officer by, shooting a criminal who's trying to kill a police officer. You interfere with that police officer. You interfere with an official proceeding. Well, I saved his life. Well, that doesn't matter. You know, you interfered.
Right.
The police officer was there handling it, and they're an official and you're not. I mean,
right.
It's that absurd, right?
There are people. Well, absolutely, all the time. This is why, like I say, the legal system. I stayed in a friend's parents' house that should have been torn down like 10 years earlier, but just for sentimental reasons, we left it in the middle of nowhere. And I thought I might do some fix up. I find there was nothing. There was no part of the house that wasn't rotten. You couldn't nail something onto the wall because it was just 100% rotten. And that's
so
what our legal system is.
It had been corrupted.
Yes, absolutely. So the thing is, for example, if you there are people who have been charged with assaulting a police officer. You hear that all these people assaulted a police officer because they touched the riot shield. Many of them to steady themselves. You know, one
what
guy
if they're
fell,
hit with the riot shield? What if they're bumped with the riot shield? I mean, that's what a riot shield is. What if they were knocked over by the riot shield? Can they then be arrested for touching the riot shield?
Well, they were. That's a whole other. I mean, we have all that on video. It's just a lot of it is still under the protective order, and we can't get it out. But there's no
protective order. What protective order? What protective order?
The courts ordered, in all these cases, a protective order, which means that anything that the defendant didn't already have but obtained from the government, they can't release it publicly. So all the stuff, I mean, the vast majority of the video and the photographs and the information about January 6th, the defendant's attorneys, well, probably the vast majority of them haven't even bothered to look because they're so overwhelmed. But any defendant attorney can see it, and we can tell you that the police started it, no question. There was a loud, boisterous crowd, which arguably was trespassing and was inconvenient, but there's absolutely no doubt that the violence was started by the police. It's caught.
Well, they're pushing people into the Capitol. They opened the doors and they pushed people in, right?
There were different experiences at different entrances.
Oh, okay.
And where there was violence, it was started by the police. Hmm. And pretty much the U.S. Capitol Police, mm-hmm. most of them were okay. It was the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department that came over and acted like thugs.
Okay, so that had to have been ordered by somebody because police don't generally do that without authority, because they don't want to lose their job and their pension, which is which most police care about. So
it was a combination of things. One of the guys on the radio who came over from the FedNapping scam in Michigan, there are several. The one you're hearing about recently, and I'm talking about another guy, Glover, I think it was. He was on the radio yelling in panic. And so any of the police officers listening to the police channel radio would believe it's the end of the world. You know, he's yelling shots fired without identifying that it was the police that shot the butt.
They're shooting tear gas and flashbang grenades. Were they shooting bullets?
Right, but it was the police doing that.
Because they had the guns. No one else had guns in D.C. It had to be the police.
But the radio traffic, which we have, the public doesn't have it, but the police officers, the defense attorneys have it, shows these people, often unidentified, immediately whipping the police into a sense of panic. And that, there's guns being fired and everything like that without recognizing, oh, yeah, you're the one who fired the gun. The tear gas was the police gassing themselves. There's this wonderful, dramatic video.
Gassing themselves?
The USCP officer has this cannon. I mean, we're talking about a big cannon, not just someone throwing a can of tear gas, but a massive tear gas cannon. And his superior is yelling at him and screaming, like, fire, 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 shoot it. And he's telling him, it's not ready. It's not ready yet. And the superior says, I don't care. Fire it. So he shoots the thing. And, of course, one of the things they found is that all this equipment had been sitting in, storage for decades. And Congress did not upgrade it. They spent trillions of dollars, but they didn't give the U.S. Capitol Police tools they needed. So all this stuff was like defective and old and didn't work. So he fires the cannon. It goes about 2 feet, lands behind the police line.
Right.
And all the police are consumed in their own tear gas. And then, of course, they blame the January 6th people for shooting tear gas.
But
it's unmistakably clear it was the police. It was the police.
Right.
A, covering the entire area with tear gas, which is against the manufacturers.
What kind of tear gas was it?
Police who gassed themselves.
Was this the CS gas that they used at Waco? Or what kind of gas was it?
There's a combination of things, and it's unclear. We've been trying to pin that down, too, and they won't
have a canister?
OC
have a picture
gas.
Picture of a canister with a serial number? I mean, you could probably trace it that way.
They don't want to give it to us. They are furiously violating Brady versus Maryland. This is the greatest series of violations of the Constitution of withholding information that I think we've ever had. They will not tell us the census. They still won't tell us why the U.S. the U.S. Congress recessed on January 6th. I mean, it's a central complaint.
They were brought downstairs. They could have been taken home. They could have been sent anywhere, but they stayed under the Capitol for seven hours. None of which is in the congressional record.
The late Gordon Reardon's rule. There's the excuse, and then there's the reason.
Oh, okay.
We're talking about at least what is the official reason? Because, you know, was it the, you know, because if you look at it, and my, you know, my client at the time is Kelly Meggs, Oath Keeper.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Is there anything in the record saying, oh, no, Kelly Meggs is outside. We're in trouble now. We better shut down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing to tie the government, the shutdown of the official proceeding to any action by any defendant. So, you know, they won't tell us that. But anyway, they'll say that there's all this, you know, all this tear gas and stuff like that. But of course, and one of the tricks is that they, who knows, if you know a lot about photographs, you can, by zooming in and only seeing part of the picture, you can change the entire scene. And, you know, so they show these videos without showing you what happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So so if you know, a lot of people, if they see videos, they think, oh, there was violence there. But you didn't see the police provoke it.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Oh, yeah. It's like the edited speeches, you know, they edited a Trump speech. You know, you see that one when they're doing a 9/11 celebration, or not, but it's a remembrance. They had part of Trump's speech where he said, you know, yeah, my building was the tallest building now, and because you know the World Trade Centers were down and all that stuff. But what you don't hear is like the 3 minutes before that, where he you know, just totally paid tribute to all the people and you know the loss of life and the whole bit, and they just edit that out, and it makes it look like the only thing Trump said was that his building was taller now. You know, that was and they said, well, I can't believe this. Trump said that his building is taller. That's the only thing he said about 9/11. Not the only thing he said about 9/11. It's like 3 minutes you cut out before he even got to that. And someone specifically said, well, where does your building stand now in the city? You know, and so these the selective edits. I've got a whole article on things that, you know, Trump said that the media misinterpreted. The classic being when Trump said some of the illegal aliens crossing our border are murderers and rapists. And the media says Trump thinks all Mexicans are murderers and rapists. Well, that's not true. That's not what he said. You
mm-hmm.
know, so this kind of stuff
right.
goes on all the time. It's amazing, you know, the edits. So back to our back to your defendants here.
Yeah, and of course he's backed up by the court and says that we can't show the entire video.
Why not?
It'd be contempt of court because the court ordered you can't.
So this would normally be grounds for a mistrial or dismissal of charges right there, simply because they're withholding evidence that you know is there. But yet
right.
the courts are working with the prosecutors to do that, and no one seems to care.
Right.
That is a real conspiracy. You're not making one up here.
Well,
this isn't a theory.
Is that a bug or is it a feature? You know, the fact that I'm seeing more and more, they say that, you know, when the federal government tries to prosecute somebody, they have a very high success rate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because they cheat.
Exactly.
You know, the government cheats
withhold
in
evidence.
Dozens of ways.
Yep.
Yeah. And what were you just saying? I forgot what you were saying. But the thing is that, in all of that, they're saying like, well, you shouldn't be trying the case in the media. What, are you kidding me? You've had nonstop, you know, yelling from everybody from January 7th, 2021. You've had condemnations by the President of the United States, who's the head chief,
mm-hmm.
the head law enforcement officer. I mean, are you out of your mind? This case has been tried entirely in the media.
Oh, yeah.
Public.
Well, what was that whole January 6th committee that was done by a Hollywood producer?
Right. I mean, they basically said, well, you shouldn't try this in the media. It was already tried in the media. There was a public show trial, and they were already found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing left for the courts to do is to sentence them. And so they're,
every once in
you know,
a while.
So they're saying,
yeah, but every once in a while, someone comes along and puts a little, you know, wrench in the mechanism. And you said there was one judge who threw out or didn't allow some of those charges. And I forgot which ones it was. Was the obstruction charge or the official proceeding charge?
Yeah.
Obstruction. So the judge throws that out, saying they can't use that?
No, but that's what they appealed. The government, maybe I forgot, maybe
right.
I got distracted before saying it. The amazing thing is that the government appealed, which means that Jake Lang and Joseph Fitcher and Garrett Millett are a year or two ahead of everybody else in terms of getting their case up to the Supreme Court. And, of course, one of the reasons that we wanted to file the amicus brief was even if the Supreme Court is not ready to understand this time around, that slowly they might start to go, oh, I get it. I see what the problem is. So, and I'm sure that being in front is a lot of work for attorney Stephen Metcalf and Norm Pattis, and I'm sure it's a lot of money. A friend of the court brief is relatively easy because we don't have to cover the whole waterfront. We just say, you know, I think you might want to look at this court. It might be helpful to you.
Yep.
So it's in comparison for Jake Lang to carry on this entire appeal, it's a big job. And that's why this is so significant, is because this is coming to the Supreme Court probably 2 years before everybody else's appeal will.
So well, I think their appeal is easier, but they shouldn't have to wait that long. Well, yeah. So why is it before the Supreme Court? What made this one different? Because the judge
Judge Nichols threw out 18 USC 1512 C2 as, you know, if you look at the context, it's all about killing witnesses and shredding documents and everything. It just doesn't apply to the situation.
Well,
and that just drives
not yet anyway. Killing witnesses? Don't count on it. That's going to happen.
Well, what the government has been doing is every time a January 6th defendant identifies a witness, they charge them. So now they're locked up and they're unavailable and they can't say anything
witnesses. This is definitely a recall thing. Okay, so let's project a little further into the future. Let's assume Trump gets elected, and we have, I don't know, Michael Flynn as Attorney General. Is there any chance that all these people that are doing all these horrible, corrupt things, this is that word again, will actually have to answer for these crimes? Or you think it's just going to be business as usual? The minions will keep doing what they're doing, and the top people will make speeches, and nothing will happen.
They should. And this is the point about, like, Congressman Bowman and everything like this. You know, so what about, here's an idea. We have the same standard for everybody. I know that's shocking, but what if there was one standard that applied to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
So in
same,
if,
yeah,
in
BLM rioters and January 6th, you know, invitational walk-in people. They were asked to come in. So doesn't the open door
thing
make a difference too? That's another thing. They didn't obstruct. They're invited in. They're actually forced in by the police.
But the government is screaming bloody murder that you're saying you can't talk about that.
Well, of course you
can. In every case, they make a bunch of arguments that that's irrelevant because you can't change the police inaction or action cannot change something that is unlawful into lawful. And the question is, of course you can.
Absolutely. How about entrapment? That's the whole point of entrapment.
Well, yeah, but also if you go back and ride around in the judge's chambers in his office,
right,
there's going to be some problems.
Yeah.
But if the judge invites all of the attorneys back to his office to have a conference, which does happen, the fact that you were invited makes it perfectly legal. Of course, things that are unlawful can be transformed into lawful. Happens all the time. It's an insane. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a judge to say that is an insane delusion.
Mm-hmm. Plea bargain.
The statute.
This is them. Plea bargain. Charges get thrown out. You know this. Yeah.
Well, there's the trespassing statute says that it is illegal to knowingly enter or remain in a restricted area without lawful authority to do so. And that's pretty much a word-for-word quote. Well, where does the lawful authority come from? I mean, if you can't change trespassing into an invitation, why is it in the statute?
Mm.
It's right there in the statute that these guys are being charged. Everybody's being charged with that statute.
And the thing was they took the signs away. They weren't restricted areas because they removed the restricted signs, thereby making it a non-restricted area.
Right. And Judge McFadden dropped the charges against a couple people on those grounds.
Huh.
And then he made a different decision, and the government has had all these weird, crazy ideas since then. It's like, you know, if you saw a police officer, you knew you weren't supposed to be there. If you saw somebody else commit a crime, you're guilty of the crime. I mean, really what this comes down to is collectivism. And if you look at the juries, if you look at the government, if you try to piece together reading all this stuff for a long time, what they're saying is there is not evidence beyond a reasonable doubt for any particular defendant. There is evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that collectively there was a crime. And I know that sounds crazy. It doesn't even, you can't even say like, what? But that's what they're saying. They're saying it's a guilty crowd. It's what I say in various pleadings I write. The defendants are guilty of guilty viewing. They saw a crime, and so they must be guilty of the crime because they saw it.
Hmm.
You know, they didn't turn around and run away when they saw a police officer. So they're guilty of being in a place they weren't supposed to be. Now, you can stand across from a bank robbery and sit there and video the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and watch the shootout and take, seeing a crime, being near a crime is perfectly legal. Now, if a police give you an order, you know, that's a different story,
they're ordering people in, you know, bullhorn guy, you know, so
right.
It's a very, very interesting. Well, and again, because they're making such stuff up like this, there has to be a record of this. And I'm thinking, like I say, I'm curious. This is why I want Trump to be elected more than anything else, because he is one pissed off hombre. And he's the only one that I think has a personal interest in making sure that all these people, you know, at the DOJ, I can't even say Department of Justice, because they're so far from that, it's ridiculous. But he's the only one that will have anything to do with actually fixing anything there. I mean, he fired Comey. That's a start. I mean, he should be arresting all these folks. It'd be really nice if they're arrested for stealing the election, but I'll see what happens. If a new DOJ were created from the old DOJ that actually investigated the old DOJ, which is what probably has to happen. But I don't have too much faith, because the minions, you know, Trump, unless he appoints the right people below him and they appoint the right people, you'll still have that same crowd in Washington. Caught that on the mic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's true. I mean, one of the problems, as I keep saying, is that for decades, those who want to save the country have underestimated how bad it is. So we're always 10 steps behind. We're trying to stake out a line and say, you know, here and no further, and we don't realize that it's already progressed so much further. It's so much worse than you think.
I think we've got some pretty good bills here. I'll tell you one that would really apply if we could ever get any decent people in Congress to go for it. That's my investigations bill. You know, that gives a defense equity payment and also allows for all compliance costs. That would eliminate all these legal defense funds and all this other nonsense. And people would have exactly the resources that the government is spending against them. Now, that bill is much more rhetorical than I think real at this point, given the current government, obviously. But even in the Trump administration, I don't know if Congress would pass that. But it's still something that people should understand, you know, that it is within the realm of possibility because we wrote it. You know, therefore, it can be passed into law. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that, but that would change everything. That if we had people could have the same tools and finances to fight their charges. I mean, how many of these people if they had an unlimited legal fund, would have challenged those misdemeanors that they have not taken, or the felonies, not taken the plea bargain.
Right? And nobody cared. Everybody said, "Oh, that'll never," you know. someone a mile away got eaten by an alligator. Like, I don't have to worry about that. That'll never happen to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I mean, that's why I put that in. I have a specific clause on that in the bill, that any time that you cannot use coercion or extortion or a threat of a more serious charge to get people to, you know, plead guilty to a lesser charge that they didn't do, just to avoid the more serious charge.
That's important. And that has happened a lot, and that has been challenged, and the courts just don't give a flip. For example, there are cases where motions have been filed and there will be appeals coming that someone turned down a plea deal and then the government turned around and slapped them with far more serious charges, added to the charges.
Mm-hmm.
clearly because they did not take the plea deal.
And that's again, that is corruption. That is, or I wouldn't say it's not corruption, but it's illegal use of judicial power. I don't know if that's such a, I just made that up, but I kind of like the sound of it. So they're illegally using their power to coerce, to extort, to create artificial things, to have people, you know, make claims. It's like the old Inquisition. You know, if you confess, you know, to being a witch, you know, or a heretic, you know, we'll kill you by, you know, chopping your head off. If you don't, we're going to burn you at the stake. So your choice is which way you die. But, well, I'm not a heretic. Well, that's not real. That's not important right now. You know, it's the same kind of thing. So they've judged guilty, and it's only a question of how. But they're really after. I mean, how many protests have you seen since January 6th? From Trump supporters?
Well, they're starting.
How many rallies?
They're starting.
Well, the Trump rallies are starting up. But how many actions where people have actually gone to watch, to support? Actually, and this is the thing people don't understand. January 6th was about supporting the Congress, you know, looking at the Trump electors. That's what it was all about.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we're over time a little bit here. I hope that's okay.
No,
but,
Dorothy's not here today. No, Dorothy's not here. Believe me, I would have said something earlier.
In an attorney discussion group, there's an email listserv with many hundreds of attorneys from January 6th on there. And, of course, one realizes that you have to be careful what you say because you don't know where it's going to go. But there's some very good discussions. Mm-hmm. And last week, one of the public defenders, federal defender's office, meaning he's – now, some of them are great. There are some federal public defenders who are awesome.
Really?
And then there are court-appointed attorneys who are regular attorneys, but they're being paid from the government funds. But one of the public defenders, he asked, like, well, if they weren't there to obstruct the official proceeding, why were they there? Like, oh, my God, this is 2.5 – you're supposed to be defending your client.
Yeah.
And 2.5 years later, you think – there's no reason why anybody was there except to obstruct the official proceeding.
No, they're like, supposed the official proceeding. The coup was there to obstruct the official proceeding, which is the irony of this whole thing. Go ahead.
And the thing is, if it doesn't matter if that public defender, government employee, doesn't want to personally believe it, okay, fine. But for the purposes of defending his client and putting the best foot forward and what the law requires, quote, zealously defending his client, that's not me saying it. Those are the rules. Mm-hmm. He has to take the position that his client was right.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, well, I don't personally believe it. Well, it doesn't matter what you personally believe. You're here to put your client's story.
Most
forward.
Defense attorneys
not
think their clients are guilty, but that doesn't matter. They still have a job.
They do. Most of these January 6th defendants' attorneys. Mm-hmm. Because they're so sloppy and they haven't looked at it, they believe their clients are guilty.
Right. Well, I was thinking for all clients, but I didn't know it was so bad about the January 6th ones. That's even worse. You know, so to go back to that point you're making earlier, I think I want to explore this a little bit more. The idea that, you know, the as we have said ever since January 6th, you know, since you called in, you know, in the general area of this whole thing, Josie called in too. We've got it on the show, but it's always been they were there to support. When Trump said, "Go support," you know, your Congress doing the right thing, which was accurately counting the electors. That's what it was all about. That's the one way that Brandon could have been sabotaged and thrown out. The coup could have failed. See, that's the thing. So this is actually groundwork for investigating the coup, because all these people are bringing up all these bogus charges. They're not considering the fact that these people were there to support the Congress. So how come that's not a major part of the defense? What was that you were saying earlier about the public defender who asked what they were doing there, or who did they ask that of?
Yeah, he could not understand that there could be any reason for anybody to be there except to commit the crime of obstructing an official proceeding.
Now, where was this said? In what context? Was it in a trial?
In
media?
In a listserv email group where attorney January 6th attorneys, you know, are supposed to discuss things. And they'll often put out, like, does anybody
defense
have a good
attorneys.
Copy of jury,
right.
jury instructions defense. On this? And anyone, then, and so somebody asked, you know, does anybody have some good material on sentencing? Because the law that created the U.S. sentencing guidelines, one of the main reasons for doing it was to make sure that people got it. There weren't wide disparities. I remember people, and I guess I'm this old, a lot of people, you know, there were a lot of news stories, like kind of maybe 60 Minutes and things like that, where people were screaming that one judge gave a sentence of 6 months for child rape, and whereas another one gave, you know, 15 years for the same crime. And
right.
people are like, this is crazy. So Congress finally passed this law. And the purpose is to promote similarity as much as possible in sentencing. But what the government has done is hoodwink these complicit judges into thinking that January 6th cases can only be compared to other January 6th cases. So if a particular count, a particular crime, normally gets, you know, 3 months in jail, but other January 6th judges have given 2 years, they're arguing that you have to give them 2 years because it's similar.
But no,
to
the other
one
should be reduced to 6 months. I could argue just the opposite, that those other have to be reduced.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I was arguing that, and somebody came back and said, "What? You know, he was baffled. He's like, wait a minute, why would anybody go to Washington, D.C., unless they were planning to attack the Capitol and overrun the Capitol and obstruct the official proceeding.
Attack the Capitol with what?
What?
Attack the Capitol with what? The cell
phone? Well, yeah, but this is a public defender who's supposed to be representing his client.
So is this a secret chat, or is the government reading all this stuff, or the prosecutors reading everything
sure
you guys are writing?
I'm sure that's what I say. You have to write things there with the awareness that
the prosecutors
are
reading it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they monitored my email, my text messages with Zachary Real in jail when I was his attorney.
Right.
You know, they're scum. And the thing is that we assume that everybody's seeing it, but and that's part of the reason why I give too much detail, because I realized there are other people might be reading it. And so I went back and I explained it. First of all, Peter Navarro wrote an article saying that the tumult, whatever you want to call it, at the Capitol destroyed Donald Trump's campaign strategy. It didn't help. It hurt, as you said. The strategy by John Eastman and other people, the lawyer of what should happen on January 6th, required the official proceeding, the joint session of Congress, to proceed.
To continue. Yep, absolutely.
Yes. Blocking it blocked Trump. It did not help
Trump. But that's part of the coup, though. We've argued that's part of the coup. It was essential to stop that count from taking place, because that's the third strike in the system where Trump could have been declared the winner. The first one was, well, obviously the election. Then there was the electoral count on December 14th, where they blocked the Trump electors. Then the third, actually there's four of them. Then there was Mike Pence, who should have sent the electors back to the state saying, give me one slate, not two. And then the last place was January 6th. So the coup had to make sure that count never took place. And they did that by bringing Trump supporters up top and putting the entire Congress, which apparently was in no danger. If it was such a riot and insurrection, why didn't they just remove the Congress and send them all home, send them to a secure location? You know, I don't know, Hawaii. You know, they could have sent them anywhere. They got money. But they didn't.
Do you know
they,
what
like, they kept
do you
them
know
in Congress. What?
Okay, great. Do you know what I've seen? I believe this is still under the protective order, but the way it's worded, you know, I can identify that it's there. I can't show you the video. But there is the video that shows everybody coming in the Senate wing door, which is the north side on the west.
Everybody.
And where
senators or people? Are you talking about just Trump, just people? Who's coming in?
Demonstrators were coming in there a lot.
Okay.
That's where the door, some of the windows were broken.
Right.
and people went around and opened the door by demonstrators.
Who broke the windows?
Or people
or,
Dominic Fazola and this mysterious character called Red on Red Glasses. Now, Red on Red Glasses is a whole other. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. What are you?
Can't you hear me?
Just being. You're just being dramatic. I thought you could. So there's this guy Red on Red Glasses wearing this red jersey, who is everywhere. He's standing right next to Ashley Babbitt when she's shot. He's like.
Oh, he's the coordinator. He's the one who's coordinated. He coordinated Ashley Babbitt's murder then.
Yeah.
And
he coordinated
the break-in.
There's one video that shows him up near the door with Ashley Babbitt. He turns around and he walks down the corridor the other way like a man with a purpose, a man on a mission. Mm-hmm. He comes back within less than a minute, goes up next to her, and then she's shot. And it looks like he covers her ears before the shot.
Oh, so she can't hear any command by Michael Byrd?
No, he covers his own ears because it's going to be
his own ears. Oh, he knows
he covers his own ears. And then the gunshot goes off.
How about that? Okay, so now I've never heard of this person.
Greg, one more thing. We have briefed all these things in motions. This is all in motions that I helped write. And the courts don't care. Like, we want to know who this guy is. Like, nah, we don't care. We don't want to know. So Dominic Pizzola and he broke the window at the Senate wing door area. And then
everybody
poured in.
Who's that?
He's a Proud Boy. Or he was a Proud Boy for about a month before January 6th. And so they opened the doors and went in there. But now I forget what the point of the story was. But inside they show all the people, kind of wandering around in there. And
so the senators were still in there.
Saying?
So the senators were still in there when it broke in. Right.
Oh, I forget what I was going to say. Yes, they were. And then later, during the video that has not been publicly released, the police officers go over to the side windows and they put down like storm shutters. Like, well, why didn't you put the shutters up before?
Why didn't they lock the doors? Or were they locked?
Yeah. Well, the Columbus door is 17 feet high, 10 tons, solid brass, never closed.
Those are the doors, the entrance to the Capitol, the big green doors. Yeah.
The center east towards the Supreme Court. Now you'll see that right behind them there were relatively flimsy doors called the East Rotunda doors, but they're like when they're closed they're about like a foot apart from each other, back to back closed. They never closed the 10-ton bronze doors. Why?
Well. Because they had to get the Trump supporters in there to stop the vote count, starting with Arizona. That's why. Here's the thing, too. Now, here's one of these great unanswered questions, is that Trump started his speech an hour late. Trump doesn't normally do that, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. He never starts an hour late. This one speech, he starts an hour late, which guaranteed that the Trump supporters would not be able to walk to the Capitol. I'm sure they figured this out, right? No one's talking about this. But I'm sure because he started an hour late, the Trump supporters were not there when Arizona came up for a vote, which meant the only people who could have been there were Antifa, Black Lives Matter, FBI mercenaries, hired guns, operatives within the FBI, outside the FBI, Ray Epps, Red on Red Man. The only people who were there at the Capitol when Arizona came up for a vote, well, maybe there are a few Trump supporters, but for the most part, Trump supporters were still on their way. That's never been explored. Trump supporters weren't there. Mm-hmm. Now, did Trump know this was going to happen? I wouldn't be surprised if he knew it. No one's talking. Ask Christina Bob. She didn't tell me. In fact, I'm going to send her this show because this is fascinating. I don't even know if they know. The Trump people know this. I would hope so. Do they know the stuff that you're talking about now?
No.
All right. I'll send her the recording. I'm going to get Peter Navarro back on the show, too. That'd be great. So has anybody looked into why that's, the timing, the timeline? The Trump supporters weren't there when Arizona came up for consideration
remember,
and debate. Right.
But I have spent 2 years trying, let's just wait today. Yeah, from September 2021, trying to get, well, about October 2021, which is exactly real, trying to get that information from the U.S. Capitol Police. They are furiously resisting giving out any of those details.
How about that?
They will try any trick or lie or say, well, it doesn't matter. It wouldn't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
They do not want – the crucial objection is that people stopped the joint session of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing they do not want anyone to know the details of, about.
Well, because the Trump supporters didn't stop it. In fact, all they had to do was lock the doors, you know, keep the restricted signs. So the coup, by design, had to stop that proceeding. So the coup are the only ones who are guilty of obstructing justice and stopping an official proceeding, because they had to make sure that the Congress didn't vote for the Trump electors or vote for enough Trump electors. All it would take is three states. Pennsylvania has 20 electors. Georgia has 16. Michigan has 16. If Georgia or Michigan and Pennsylvania, plus any other state, any other battleground state, if those Trump electors were accepted, he's over 270. That's what they're worried about. Now, here's another question. Let's get back down to this. This Congress was meeting for 7 hours under the Capitol. That was a session. That may not have been a declared session, but they were all meeting together. There was no interruptions as far as I know, so they met for 7 hours, and there is nothing in the congressional record.
Mm-hmm.
I posted it several times. Who did I tell about that? I told Brendan Strack about that. He didn't know. There's nothing there. So if they were meeting for 7 hours under the Capitol, how was it obstructed?
Well, they deny that they were, you know, they were doing, I mean, they don't mention that they were, they make it sound as if, you know, it's like people need to be aware.
There was nothing stopping them from meeting. They were all there under the Capitol, happily just sitting around for 7 hours.
Right,
but they
say without saying that they were just milling around, killing time. They don't actually say it.
For 7 hours.
But they want you to assume.
Hmm.
You know, it's like I call it Rorschach.
Joe Biden never discussed business with his son on a 14-hour airplane ride.
Exactly.
Right.
But that's why it's ink blot test. There's something called neuro-linguistic programming, which 99% of the stuff you will see on the internet just because of clickbait and trying to, you know, sell things is about weight loss or seducing women.
Mm-hmm.
But the origins of NLP are not such mass marketing, you know, consumer trying to, you know, get rich quick, you know, things. There is actually a limited science. I'm not saying it's like some, you know, soup. I'm not saying I believe it totally. But the idea is that when someone speaks in a confusing way,
mm-hmm.
and they trust you, you've built a rapport, and that it's like a light hypnotic trance where the person fills in the blanks from what they already believe.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you see from the DOJ, and the Democrats or whatever, is they say things without saying them. They hint at it in a way that they want you to be suckered into
making their conclusion. Yeah.
Right. That they never actually said.
That's a PSYOP.
That's a psychological operation. Yeah.
That's a PSYOP. Okay. And the CIA and the militaries of the world have studied this for hundreds of years. They know exactly how to do it. That's a PSYOP. Are you thinking?
So, I'm disagreeing. I have not. You have said it all. I'm completely blown away.
Ooh, okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go back and check the, like, past 15 minutes and tell Christina Bob she has to listen to it, because this is fascinating. But it's interesting go ahead.
See if Peter Navarro will come on. Of course, mm-hmm. you know, the problem is that when they're prosecuting everybody, they're shutting people down.
Right.
But see if you can get him to come out and talk about the fact that Trump strategy required the official proceeding to take place. It's like I keep saying I've worked into pleadings and everything like that. Some of them I filed myself when I was representing Kelly Meigs. That, you know, first of all, they say that They tried to forcibly prevent the transfer of presidential power.
That's not true.
Okay, what presidential power is transferred on January 6th? None. How is presidential power transferred in the United States? The clock strikes noon on January 20, not 6, 20, at Washington, D.C. local time. So how? What, I'm going to stop the Earth from rotating, and so that it doesn't turn noon. I mean, it's just insane stupidity. I mean, how can they? I mean, if you
go ahead.
No, I mean, if you're going to tell a lie, at least give it a little bit of thought. You know, it's just crazy. Go ahead. What's that?
Well, but we've said this for years, though, that the whole point of the coup was to stop the count of the electors. So Trump, you know, we don't have said it so explicitly. That's probably a good point to make. But that Trump's strategy for winning required John Eastman, the whole bit, required that those electors be challenged in the normal constitutional procedure, where one representative and one senator says, you know what, we need to talk about this. We need to pick one. That would have been the normal course of affairs. But there's no accident that the coup started during Arizona, which alphabetically is the first of the battleground states. Arizona, mm-hmm. Mexico, Nevada, Michigan, Minnesota, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and that's it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, those 7 states. Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, and Arizona. Yeah, and Arizona's first alphabetically. That's why they had to start then. Now, here's a question. Why is there nothing in the congressional record about the meeting for 7 hours? Is that something you can challenge?
Because they claim that there wasn't a meeting, or they imply that there wasn't a meeting to which any congressional.
Well, why don't you haul a senator or a representative in, someone friendly, Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, you know, Ted Cruz, and say, hey, what were you guys doing for 7 hours?
Well, that would be good. But the thing is like we subpoenaed Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, and Kevin McCarthy in defense of January 6th defendant Ryan Zink. And not the Zink up in New Hampshire with the E at the end, but Ryan Zink. And they didn't show up.
Huh.
So Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene, they want to run their mouth, but when we called them in there, and we specifically called them in there to find out what was going on the other side, because the government won't tell us what I just discussed. You know, what was the trigger for the Congress to disband?
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to ask them what was happening on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't show up. Matt Gaetz didn't show up.
Well, the subpoena, you know, isn't there a contempt of court citation or something like that, or they don't care about that either?
Well, if I were the lead lawyer, there would have, you know, we would have done things differently, but.
You had a weenie. You had a weenie. It's the problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay. Put that alone. If I get Matt Gaetz back on the show, my first question is going to be, what were you doing under the Capitol for 7 hours during January 6th? That's my first question.
Yeah.
There'll be others.
And I think you should ask, you know, the similar related question to Pete Navarro. Like
Ask Christina Bach too.
In September 2018, and they just happened to be feminist. It could have been anything, but they were they were rioting against Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
They announced, they organized. I mean, whereas in January 6th, everybody says there was no plan. We just showed up to give our support. The left publicly announced is what they're going to do. There's a poster that Roger Roots found that, you know, of saying from January 14th to January 2017, stop Trump from becoming president. I mean, they announced what they accused the January 6th people of doing, for which there is no evidence. It's publicly admitted by the left again and again and again. So on the Kavanaugh thing, they publicly admit it. They organized this whole thing. They say that they posted a Twitter thing saying that they were going to shut down the Congress, but the U.S. Capitol Police did it for us because they were afraid. And they say that they occupied the entire Hart Senate office building, every floor, everywhere. And I have a friend, Ron Wilcox, who was in a senator's office when this happened, and he was stuck inside. He couldn't get, you know, inside the senator's office for like a couple hours because it was crazy outside. So, I mean, so that's okay. They don't want to prosecute that. They gave him like a $35 or $50 fine, dropped the case. So, I mean, they gave him bail of like $35 to $50, dropped the charges. So the bail became the fine of $50.
Right.
Yep. Of the few that they arrested. Anyway, so the question is, if you were going to obstruct, if somebody came here and said, we are all here to obstruct Congress, you know, we want to shut down the voting, how does that make Trump president for one more second?
Yeah.
I mean, the insanity here is just, it's wild.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how in the hell would storming the Capitol on January 6th add one more second to Donald Trump's presidency that ends at noon on January 20.
Or shut down the government for that matter. I mean, the government's huge. How are you going to shut down the entire government? Besides, the Congress was all there. The government wasn't even slowed down. Now, they could have met. They may not have. I think arms were twisted. I think that's what really happened, is that they set everybody out, because when they came back, they were in a completely different view. You know, there was a bunch of people that said ahead of time, Kelly Loeffler in particular, who said, I'll be challenging, you know, this election in Georgia. I think it's fraudulent, or whatever she said. And then after 7 hours came back and said, for the good of the country, for the peace, the harmony, you know, to right this terrible wrong, you know, I'll vote for Brandon. Give me a break. Tell me she wasn't talked to. And then she promptly gets kicked out. Well, idiot. You know, you made the deal with the devil. And so this, it's so obvious. They could not have taken over the government. They could not have changed the government. They could not have done anything. I mean, the largest mob in the world, even if they destroyed the Capitol building, it wouldn't destroy the government. You know, and if they were that violent, they would have taken the Congress out and moved them somewhere else. They could have gone to the Pentagon, sat there for a while. How come the Congress wasn't moved? If it was that dangerous a situation, how come the Congress, if they really believed this was an insurrection to take over the government, why did they leave the government there? Jonathan.
No, I agree. That's the thing. It's like, you know, why wouldn't they close the Columbus doors? Why wouldn't they put up the why did they put up the window shutters after it was already too late?
Well, for appearances. Let me change the subject a little bit here to this 14th Amendment thing that we hear all the time, that Trump, you know, led an insurrection, therefore he can't run for office. Now, I looked up this section, and there's only one time in our history where an armed rebellion and insurrection could actually have overthrown the U.S. government. Trivia time, Jonathan. What is it?
Civil War?
Yep. Civil War was the only time in our history where a viable rebellion, an armed rebellion and insurrection, because the slave states were seceding from the Union, they formed the Confederacy. So the Confederacy was an alternative government, was a separate government, was a rebellious government designed to overthrow the federal government in Washington. So which party was the Confederacy?
Democrats.
Exactly. I'm being like a lawyer here. I'm actually asking questions I know the answer to. This is kind of fun. So if the 14th Amendment says that you cannot run if you engage in an armed rebellion and an overthrow insurrection of the U.S. federal government, then why do we still have a Democrat Party? Why weren't they not abolished and removed when the 14th Amendment was enacted?
Say it again. What?
I think I'm stuck. If the 14th Amendment clearly says that if you engage in an armed rebellion, and this is written specifically for the Confederacy, armed rebellion and insurrection against the United States government, you know, to secede and, you know, actually have an entire army, you know, taking on the Union Army, that you cannot run for office, that means that the Democrat Party, Democrats, cannot run for office because of the Civil War, because of the Confederacy, and yet they're still here.
If you interpreted as being the party rather than the individuals, which, you know, people do that kind of thing all the time. It's a reasonable argument. And why not, like a lot of these cases are bubbling up just to try to test the issue and air it. Like some Florida lawyer tried to keep Trump off the Florida ballot, and the judge said, well, you don't have standing. You're just a bystander. But could
California
somebody
too.
Bring that?
Yeah.
Could somebody bring that case and make the point publicly and try to get a ruling on it? Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got the 14th Amendment right here. Let's see. No person shall be a senator or representative of Congress or hold any office, civil or military, in the United States, which having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or state legislature, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, that would be the U.S. federal government, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. Well, we could say, we could actually change that a little bit. Let's just say that those who engaged in insurrection and rebellion, in other words, the coup that sponsored and ran the entrapping of Trump supporters in the Capitol, they're the ones who cannot run for office. They're the ones that engaged in an insurrection to overthrow the government and installed their illegal candidate, Brandon, and that the January 6th constitutional proceeding of challenging the electors was suspended by the coup. That was their insurrection. So anybody who engaged that or gave it aid and comfort, that'd be the entire DOJ, the Capitol Hill Police, the DC Metro Police, all the members of Congress who engaged in this and didn't object. And there's only 144 members of the House and 12 senators who really wanted to challenge this. They're the only ones who I would think would not be guilty, but everybody else is. They're the ones who can never run for office, hold office, or hold any position in DC again, just based on the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, you know, it's just, it could be, but the thing is, of course, that the thing, of course, about is that simply because I say, it's like, well, you know, you have to pay restitution if you damage or steal federal property. And you, Greg Penglis, you stole Mount Rushmore and sold it to space aliens from another galaxy. And so you have to pay restitution. And like, well, wait a minute. I didn't actually do that.
Yeah.
You know, where's your proof that I ever did such a thing?
Well, the government doesn't own Mount Rushmore anymore. So obviously you did that, you know, or I did that. Yeah. They could use that circular logic.
All these leftist groups, they recruit and publicly advertise, come and shut it down. Come and stop President-elect Trump in 2017 from becoming president. The poster says, I should send it to you. We should put it up in the on Facebook. The They say that stop the Trump-Pence administration before it begins. Now that is clear cut. Nobody said anything like that about January 6th. Now, again, the government takes things out of context, and they talk a lot about being prepared for the violence of Antifa that they expect to be thrown against them. But you have to really stretch to try to think that maybe any of the January 6th people did any of that, things that are openly admitted by leftists. So the question is like, how do you say that that Trump engaged in any of those things?
No,
I mean,
they
you have to have.
But they're using the accusations against him to cover up for their own crimes. I don't know what that's called, but it goes beyond projection. But the whole defense of the coup is an offense against the people that are saying that are naming the coup. You know, and you look at it. Look at the steps along the way. Look at the places where the coup succeeded. They successfully stole the election, November 3rd, 2020. They successfully blocked electors. Remember when the police were blocking in Michigan? That lawyer said, you have to let us in. We're Trump electors. And they're like, no, you can't. Governor says you can't come in. So they actually blocked electors from going in. They had death threats against electors who were going to vote for Trump. They said, you better vote for Hillary, you know, or we're going to kill you. That's what they said. Mike Pence, he's part of the coup because he refused to send the electors back, the slates back to the state legislature. So he's part of it. That was another play. That was another obstruction of justice, right? And then the last one, of course, is January 6th. So the coup took several steps, you know, in order to be accomplished. The first one, stealing the election, then blocking the electors, then having Mike Pence defy the Constitution and not send the electors back, and then January 6th, where they had a coup so the electors couldn't be challenged. So you can take each one of those cases and show that the people who are guilty are the ones who are in charge of the courts. That's the problem. The coup is right in the court. So that's why you're not getting justice. That'd be like a committee of bank robbers, you know, prosecuting a bank robber for bank robbery. You know, it's the same thing.
Almost
exactly. The criminals are running the prosecution. That's kind of a good bumper sticker. The criminals, those who engage in the coup, are running the prosecution. So, of course, they're making stuff up. They don't care. They've already broken the law so many times, it doesn't matter to them anymore by engaging in the coup. And yet, the geldings refuse to hold. So this is why this impeachment hearing is so bogus. You can't impeach somebody who's not president. Biden has no title. He stole the presidency. He's sitting in the White House illegally. You don't impeach him. If you impeach him, you're justifying the coup. This is why I hate this impeachment so much. You don't impeach him. Uh-huh. You arrest him for stealing the government. They've justified. Every time someone says President Biden, you notice I don't let people say President Biden on my show unless they're a really big public figure. Because but you can't say that on my show. You can't say Biden administration because there isn't one. And I'm not going to spread fake news, he said with a grin. The coup, the criminal, I don't know if you can use that or not, but look at those four instances where the coup overthrew the government. They overthrew it on election day. They tried to overthrow it with the elector count. Mike Pence overthrew it by not sending the electors back. And January 6th overthrew it by refusing to let the constitutional count go forward and constitutional challenge go forward. So there's your coup. At each step, and you can prove premeditation because they were ready each time for each of those events. They're ready for the stolen election. They're ready to block the electors. Mike Pence was ready to not send them back. And January 6th, they were ready to bring the Trump supporters in to suspend the proper proceeding. So there's your coup right there in those four steps.
Well, that's
those
why
can't be an accident.
It'd be good if Navarro would come back and do that.
I'll send it to him. You know, I know folks that can get him stuff. You know, I have contacts. I'm in radio. I know people. Hey, make a deal you can't refuse. You know, I'll get it to him.
Well, he has to be not feel too intimidated by the system. But if he's willing to
Peter Navarro, I don't think he's intimidated at all. same as Christina Bob. I don't think they're afraid of anything as far as this goes. You know, and Trump certainly not. Yeah. Well, we've only got a few minutes left. Thanks for staying the extra hour. I appreciate it. I think the second hour was better. The first was good, but the second was outrageous. This has been really fun. Have we anything
else? I worry a little bit for radio because some of these points require a setup. You know, and as a lawyer, I think, you know, telling people the general context of things is helpful, but it may not be. And believe me, I have been accused of being a bomb thrower, as you can tell. But I do want to educate, and so I hope it's not too boring by the time we get to the, you know, all the threads come together, and you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. It's like we got 6 minutes, I guess, but I could talk about the impeachment inquiry hearing that we had last week.
Yeah, feel free. Yeah. Well,
the thing is that maybe they didn't bill it very well, explain it very well, but I took away from that they were setting the groundwork. Like they called in people who are not witnesses of what happened. They're legal experts. Because it was kind of housekeeping. It was trying to set up the rules. How should we go about this? And the Democrats kept attacking that these legal witnesses didn't have any facts, but they weren't there to give facts.
No,
they were there to help the committee.
Did the Republicans point out that little tidbit that
were
there as?
No, of course not.
They
didn't explain.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is that they didn't make it clear that this is just kind of figuring out how should we go about this.
Well, why would you ask them? Jonathan Turley is a liberal. There's a couple of other liberals. There was one real liberal, and the only decent one was that woman who was pretty articulate. But he, you know, and then AOC says, "Well, do you have first-hand witness to the crime?" Of course, they all said no. So the implication, like you said before, the PSYOP, is that there must be no crime because none of these witnesses witnessed anything. But that's not what they were there for. So it was incumbent on James Comer and Jim Jordan, I think Matt Gaetz is on the committee too, to say, wait a minute, these people are just background. But the thing is, why did they need background anyway? That's like saying, I can't exercise my Second Amendment rights unless the Supreme Court rules that it's actually an amendment. Nonsense. It's right there in the Constitution. Of course I can exercise my rights, and the government can't touch them. You know, so they're doing something they didn't need to do. This is why I've always said that, like, say, when the people say, well, you got to get the Supreme Court's permission, you know, to say the Second Amendment's an individual right. No, I don't. All rights are individual, you idiot, you know. And I said, why would I risk the Supreme Court doing a bad ruling, which is much more likely, and saying something stupid like the Second Amendment only exists in your home, but if you're out in public, it doesn't exist, which is a bunch of nonsense, you know, by having them do a court ruling. None of that makes any sense. Make sense?
Right. I agree.
So back to this hearing, why don't they just impeach? Why don't they just have an impeachment hearing? What's this inquiry? So they're holding a hearing to see if they should impeach? Well, the Democrats' answer is no.
They're holding an inquiry to determine if they should move it up to an impeachment hearing.
Oh.
And then decide if they should. Now, but the thing is that the Geldings, I mean, it's clear that, like, Ken Buck and other phony, you know, DPRs, the Democrats pretending to be Republican, are
Transgender Democrats.
There you go. Exactly.
Appropriate.
They obviously don't know. They haven't bothered to spend the time to know the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the idea is this to be an educational thing.
Mm-hmm.
both to other Republicans to get enough of a majority to move forward and to the public.
But what are they impeaching him on? What, bribery, corruption? Those aren't impeachment charges. Those are federal, you know, bribery, larceny charges. Those are
well,
crimes. You don't have to. Or do they have to impeach him first? I mean, he should be arrested.
No, I mean, you could do either. But the thing is that those are grounds for impeachment.
Yeah, but let's say if a president robs a bank, right? President robs a bank, felony, state level, local level felony. Do you have to impeach the president before that president is arrested, or just arrest him for robbing a bank? Aren't they? Well, there's a 90-second warning, but aren't they?
The DOJ has a policy against not arresting a sitting president, but it's not a law or rule.
Well, they have,
but no.
Talking about ongoing investigations, too. So what? Yeah, go ahead.
The Republican House cannot arrest somebody. They cannot indict somebody. So they're doing, of those two options, there's only one of them that's available.
Hmm. Okay, so they impeach. And we know that during the Brandon insurrection, the DOJ is not going to indict, although they certainly could if it was, but Brandon's still subject to indictment after Trump takes over, right? On bribery, corruption, and all the racketeering and all the other charges. And so is this whole family.
Correct.
So I would civil asset forfeiture, the entire ill-gotten gains, including all companies, including people that helped, you know, were accessories to the crimes. They lose all their money too. Anything that was involved can be traced back to this. And then and any property they bought with that money, you know, houses, cars, boats, things like that. And that money is given to the J6 people. I mean, that's how you stop this kind of thing.
Yeah,
but as far as impeachment goes, they could use the Pelosi model. Nancy Pelosi already established that all you have to do to impeach is take a voice vote. That's it. That's all you need. Right.
Well, it depends whether we like the target or not.
Oh. But that's what they did to Trump. Second impeachment was a voice vote. Who wants to impeach Trump?
Right, but
we do.
But the Democrats don't like him, so that's different.
Oh.
Remember, it's I used to have up on my Facebook page for a long time the emblem. It's different when Democrats do it.
It is, yeah. Let's do. We're actually in overtime, so I want to just let's do a couple of rapid fire things. Do you think Robert Kennedy is going to run as an independent?
Certain, no, but yeah, I do think he will.
Okay.
I mean, I can't say a certainty, but I think it's leaning that way.
Okay, and if he does, who's going to be affected more, Trump or Brandon?
Brandon. I mean, he may pull from both, but how do people who are Democrats only because their parents and grandparents and great grandparents are Democrats vote against a Kennedy in favor of, you know, a pile of vegetable?
Okay, so the real Republicans are going to vote for Trump. The Marxist Democrats are going to vote for Brandon because they believe in coups and illegal governments. The independents are the best shot for Robert Kennedy, and you figure half of them are leaning Republican, the other half are leaning Democrat. So he's going to get
how many
Republicans? Yeah, that's my question.
Who are the never Trumpers going to vote for? Would they vote? I mean, are they going to go for Robert Kennedy? You know, Robert Kennedy Jr.? Are the never Trumpers going to vote for Biden?
They're not going to vote for Biden.
I mean,
but they might vote for Kennedy, even though he has very unpopular stands on abortion, climate change, gun control, and things like that. He's got some incredibly unpopular stands, which I do not approve of. But
are
as
the
a person
are
of integrity,
the never Trumpers gonna, would the never yeah. Trumpers vote for Trump?
No.
So it kind of, you know, they're kind of stuck staying home.
Yeah. I just don't want a Ross Perot scenario where Clinton, I'm sure, bribed Ross Perot to get in the race so that he could win. Because he only got he didn't get a majority vote. He only got a plurality.
Mm-hmm.
Most people forget that.
We had a case like that of a state race in Virginia where there was I think it was a Libertarian Party whose
mm-hmm.
big, and there are no campaign limits in Virginia, except it has to be disclosed and it can't be a corporate donation. Well, I mean, there are limits, but a person can give an unlimited amount. So the big donation that launched the Libertarian was a flaming left-wing Democrat whose donation helped launch the Libertarian. So yeah, it could happen, but and it may be hard to know, but I think I mean, if Trump's viability because of all the legal things gets harder, then people might go to RFK. But I think the whole point is, like, I don't think Ron DeSantis is that bad. But why would you vote for Ron DeSantis when you can vote for the real thing?
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is true with Trump supporters. Why would I vote for RFK when I can vote for the real thing?
Go ahead.
Unless something happens that they can't vote for him.
Huh. Well, it's going to be really, yeah, well, he needs Secret Service protection for one thing. That's another issue. They're setting him up for, you know, I mean, you've heard of, you know, getting rid of your opponents by not giving him Secret Service protection. That might actually be possible because there's always somebody that wants to get a Kennedy because there's sickos out there. But that's one of my concerns is that, you know, I'm sure he has his own private security, but Secret Service will be nice because they're kind of good at it. So not all the time, but most of the time. So we'll see. Anyway, that's about it. That's all the stuff I had. This is going to be a very interesting week. Yeah. Yeah. Lots to talk about next week too.
All right. Well, apparently the trial of the Trump Organization starts today.
Oh, it does.
Which is a whole nother nonsense.
Is it televised?
We've touched on.
Can we catch it on network?
I don't
know. I'll take a look. We'll see. I'll go check out the hearings now that, of course, the Supreme Court's in session, Congress is in session. All the people that are out to get you are in session. That's pretty bad. Jonathan, thank you. We'll talk next week.
All right. Thank you.
Right.
Goodbye.
Take care now. Goodbye. So the only thing I played here was my book ad. And I actually meant to play our contact information. I kind of goofed on that, but that's okay. So now I'm going to play contact. It's 10:05. We're a little bit over time, but that's okay. That sounds good. And I'll play a couple of announcements, and then we'll do it again tomorrow. Tomorrow I got a special guest. Gene Valentino is coming on. Gene is a pilot. and we're going to talk aviation. We're going to talk about the FAA mosaic rule. It's going to be really interesting, I think, because I want to get back into flying, and it's just a question of time and money and all that kind of good stuff. So let me play our things here, and I'll see you all tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time, when we do it all again. Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive, conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Grave Care. And now as an affiliate of Grave Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grave Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gravecare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at gravecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grave Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at strikeforceenergy.com. That's strikeforceenergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.